Good evening, everyone. The December 15th, 2015 Loudoun County Planning Commission public hearing will now come to order. As is our custom, let us stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Any member of the public who wishes to speak for or against any item on the agenda may do so this evening. We request that you sign up with the secretary who sits at the end of the dais to my left. Please complete a speaker slip indicating your name and which item you would like to address. In the interest of fairness, we ask that speakers observe the 3-minute time limit. You may speak at either podium, and for multiple speakers, alternating the podium speeds everything up. The speakers' podiums will digitally display your remaining time. At the end of your 3 minutes, we would appreciate you summing up and yielding the floor. Individuals who identify themselves as representatives of citizens' organizations or citizens' associations may speak for 6 minutes, provided that they submit a letter from the organization authorizing that individual to speak on their behalf. I would like to also remind all applicants to present the certification of notice to the recording secretary, who sits at the end of the dais before the public hearing starts on each application. Our procedure for public hearings are as follows. First, the staff will make a presentation. Then the applicant will make a presentation. The Planning Commission may ask questions or engage in brief discussion. Then public comments will be taken. After public comment, the applicant may take up to 5 minutes for further comment or response. The Planning Commission public hearing starts at 6 p.m. It is the Planning Commission's policy not to take up any new items after 11:30 p.m., and the public hearing will adjourn no later than 12 p.m. The first item on tonight's agenda is disclosures. Commissioner Clancher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a conversation with Ben Wales regarding the Vine and Branches application, and I had a conversation with Packy Crown regarding the Shops at Eastgate applications.
Thank you, Commissioner Clancher. Commissioner Blackburn.
Yesterday, 12:14, I met with Packy Crown regarding the Shops at Eastgate application.
Thank you, Commissioner Blackburn. Commissioner Siska.
Only emails that are already on record, and I had one conversation with a citizen who will be speaking tonight on one of the applications.
Thank you, Commissioner Siska. Commissioner Scheel.
A week ago, spoke with Charlie Scully regarding a plaque for the old Noakes Church on the 9th. Spoke with Judge Thomas Horn and Anna Peterson in regard to the old Catoctin Church graveyard and cemetery, and Judge Horn appointed me a trustee. Today spoke with Chris Adams, the owner of the Adams Green Funeral Home in Herndon, regarding possible interments at the Old Methodist Episcopal Church at the corner of Church and Davis Streets.
Thank you, Commissioner Scheel. Commissioner Rudicelli.
Thank you. I met this evening with Packy Crown and applicants for the Shops at Eastgate.
Thank you, Commissioner Rudicelli. Commissioner Dunn.
No disclosures.
Thank you, Commissioner Dunn. On Wednesday, December 2nd, I attended the a meeting at the Writings at Blue Springs regarding the Eastgate Commerce Center application. On Monday, December 7th, 2015, I met with Ken Watkinson from the Vine and Branches Church and Ben Wales with Cooley regarding the Vine and Branches Church application. And on Friday, December 11th, I had a phone conversation with Mike Romeo regarding the Kirkpatrick West Commercial Center. And today I had another conversation with Michael Romeo regarding the Kirkpatrick West Commercial Center. And that finishes up disclosures. Our first application, we don't have action summaries. Our first application on the agenda is zoning amendment 2014-0006, proposed zoning ordinance amendment to establish new or revise, clarify, and or delete existing regulations and definitions in regard to the noise standards.
Mr. Chairman, while they're setting up, if I could remind the commission that the Kirkpatrick West work session that was scheduled for this evening has been deferred and postponed, tentatively scheduled for January the 12th. So there will be no discussion on Kirkpatrick West this evening.
Yes, and our apologies on that. If anybody would like to hear that, we'll have to wait till the next meeting. Thank you. Good evening, Ms. Stein.
I'm Teresa Stein with Zoning Administration, here to present ZOM 2014-0006 noise standards. First, I'd like to give you some background. During the discussion of the data center ZOM in December 2014, the Board of Supervisors hired a consultant to assist the Transportation and Land Use Commission in making a recommendation to the full board with regard to the noise standards for data centers. At the January 2014 Transportation Land Use Committee meeting, the consultant recommended that the noise standards be reviewed to address considerations that impact noise as it relates to data centers, such as height of adjoining structures, the point at which sound is measured, and enforcement procedures. The Zoning Ordinance Action Group issued a report in February of 2014 that concurred that the noise standards should be reviewed, but they felt the standards should be examined holistically and not specifically for data centers. On July 16, 2014, the board authorized staff to hire a consultant to begin the review of the noise standards, and the contract was awarded to Hessler & Associates in September of 2014. Hessler & Associates began researching the standards of other jurisdictions, as well as performed an analysis of three different uses that are common in the county: bed and breakfast, kennel, and a data center. The research and technical memorandum were issued to staff in 2014 and is attachment 2 of your staff report. Staff and the consultant discussed the research and drafted the first round of text. In doing so, we tried to equalize the desires of the citizens and the needs and realities of the business community. The draft text was sent on referral to various county agencies and the Zoning Ordinance Action Group, and comments were received in April and May of 2015. Staff and the consultant reviewed the referral comments and revised the text to address some of the concerns that were raised. One concern that came from Economic Development and the Chamber of Commerce was that the process was moving too fast and there should be more public input and review. So the staff advertised three public outreach sessions to seek comment and input from citizens and businesses alike. Those three sessions were held in August and were in a variety of locations in the county: Hamilton, Leesburg, and South Riding. The advertisement is found in attachment 5 of your staff report. An email address and website were also created to solicit comments. A summary of those comments from the outreach sessions and the website and email are attachment 6 of the staff report. Staff also met with the Department of Economic Development and subcommittees of the Economic Development Advisory Commission, as well as data center and business representatives. The text was again revised to reflect some of those comments. Staff also held follow-up meetings to seek clarification in issues with the draft text, which is attachment 3 of your staff report. The changes that were made in response to the public outreach and meetings with the business community are: we've maintained one maximum level for both rural and suburban residential uses. We've added a definition of emergency and exempted noise from generators and equipment during emergency situations. We've expanded the exemptions to include residential air conditioner condensers, public uses, and utilities. We provided more specifics on how sound is measured and further defined the criteria for measurement. and we reinstated the industrial use category. Generally, staff tried to be more consistent and improve the standards. The outreach furthermore revealed that there's a lack of knowledge and confusion about the two ordinances that are in effect and regulate noise, the codified ordinance and the zoning ordinance. And I'd like to take a moment and try to explain the difference between the two. The codified ordinance is regulated by the sheriff's office, and the zoning ordinance is regulated by the zoning enforcement staff. The codified ordinance regulates excessive sound in residential areas, while the zoning ordinance regulates noise between residential, commercial, and industrial uses. The codified ordinance uses the standard of audible and discernible within dwellings, and the zoning ordinance sets at a specific decibel level measured at the receiving property line. Sheriff's office respond 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to any noise complaints, while zoning enforcement responds during business hours unless other arrangements are made. Zoning and the Loudoun County Sheriff's Office acknowledge that there needs to be cooperation between the two departments in order to educate the public, and that we need to create a protocol to refer complaints as necessary, and we are working on that cooperative system. Please note that the codified ordinance is also under review, and it's anticipated that the Sheriff's Office will be bringing those changes forward to the Board of Supervisors at about the same time this amendment will be going, which would be the early part of 2016. There could be some overlap in an enforcement. So generally, the changes to the zoning ordinance standards and the changes to the noise standards in the zoning ordinance are: the existing noise standards have been interpreted to apply only to stationary sound. However, the proposed standards will apply to stationary and non-stationary alike. We've expanded the purpose of the noise standards and clarified that uses with noise standards in Section 5600, additional regulations for specific uses, are exempt from these proposed standards. We've clarified that legal, existing, established uses may continue to adhere to the standards in effect today. We've added definitions for terms that are used in the noise standards, provided methods of measurement that specify the type of meter used, when samples are taken, the number of samples taken, and requiring the averaging of samples and standardization of microphone height. We've revised the maximum sound level table to create an allowance for mixed-use developments, civic, and institutional uses. We've also revised the table to measure from the receiving property line rather than the emitter, and provide specification for measurement location in mixed-use developments. The decibel level for residential and industrial uses have not changed from the current noise standards, but we've increased the decibel level for commercial uses from 60 dBA decibels to 65 dBA. And we've added the mixed-use development category. The existing standards regulate impact sound, but because the proposed sound meter type and settings account for the nature of impact sound, which is generally 1 second or less, it's no longer necessary to regulate impact sound differently. We've added an exemption for generators used during emergencies and when equipment is tested for emergencies. We've added an exemption for residential air conditioner condensers, public utilities and uses, and clarified that sounds regulated by the state code and codified ordinance are exempt. In Article 8 definitions, we've revised the definition of decibel to conform to the EPA standards and have added all the iterations or abbreviations that's found in the ordinance. And we've added the definition of impulsive sound, which is used in Section 5600, additional regulations for specific uses and other areas of the ordinance. There are concerns that were brought forward from the public and business representatives that staff believe have been addressed in the draft text or will be accommodated with the implementation of the noise standards. Staff recommends this item go to the Planning Commission work session, where more detailed explanation and rationale for staff's proposal would be presented. However, some of the concerns are the Entertainment Subcommittee of the Nighttime Economy Ad Hoc Committee questioned whether the maximum proposed decibel was loud enough for mixed-use residential and if there should be a day and night level. The Zoning Ordinance Action Group, Northern Virginia Building Industry Association, and the Chamber of Commerce questioned the desirability of eliminating impact sound maximums and regulating all sounds at the same level. There are concerns from the public that measuring from the receiving property line allows the sound to be louder, and business points out that the prediction of noise at the receiver may be difficult. Economic Development noted there are uses that have noise standards in Section 5600 that are inconsistent with similar uses that will be subject to the new standards, and that this difference could be a disincentive. For example, commercial wineries have noise standards in Section 5600, but a farm winery would be subject to these standards. The public is concerned because there's no clarity as to who's responsible for responding to complaints, and there's a lack of knowledge on who to call and on what type of complaint. The Chamber of Commerce expressed concern that the expense of purchasing new equipment and the cost of training zoning enforcement staff. Data centers and public utilities were concerned that the exemption for emergency situations were not broad or specific enough, and that requests to go off-grid during peak demand times would not be covered by emergency situations. There are issues that staff would like to discuss in more detail with the Planning Commission and seek your input and guidance. One issue is that existing uses are exempt from the new standards and must adhere to the noise standards in effect the time they were established. There are questions as to the applicability of these standards to expansions. Staff does have a couple of options and would like to seek your input. The consultant recommended, and staff has agreed, that there be only one decibel level applicable day and night. However, there are business groups that feel like there should be separate daytime and nighttime levels. And finally, the consultant has a preferred recommendation that lowers the residential maximum decibel level by 5 dBA for residential and mixed-use developments in order to reduce citizen complaints. Therefore, staff is recommending that ZOAM 2014-0006 noise standards go to a work session so that the outstanding issues can be discussed. The consultant, George Hessler of Hessler & Associates, will be available to join the conversation at the work session. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stein. Is there any questions of the applicant or staff? Commissioner Scheel.
In regard to the daytime and nighttime sessions that you mentioned, which are more stringent, the daytime session or the nighttime session?
Typically, daytime is 5 dBA louder than nighttime.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Scheel. Any other questions of staff or the applicant? Seeing none, we'll open up public hearing. Our first speaker is Caitlin Lindgren, followed by Mital Gandhi.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Kate Lindgren. I'm a member of the Regency Residential Community located in Ashburn, Virginia. As a citizen and a resident of the Ashburn community, I have concerns over the proposed amendment. I wish to share those with you today, and specifically as they relate to data center noise. We understand that these noise proposed amendments have been implemented in order to better protect the residents of excessive noise levels. However, I must say that I am concerned here that there are standards here that don't sufficiently protect our community and other county citizens from data center-related noise. For example, my community itself represents a very good highlighting of the way that these concerns came about. The Regency, as background, was established in 1997 and contains 150 homes. After years of development, our residential community, which is located in Ashburn, is now at the heart of Data Center Alley. It's located in, at the heart of three large data centers on all sides, and more are coming. For over 2 years, the Regency community, myself included, has experienced a noise from nearby data centers that is unlike any other intermittent noise or white noise from traffic. Instead, it is a continuous, tonal, irritating sound. It can be audibly recorded and has been by myself and I'm sure others in order to capture this sound. It can be heard both inside and at times slightly outside and slightly inside, depending on how open your windows are. Our community has significant concerns that this proposed revised standard does not protect us, and so we're very concerned about this. We recognize that there are noise concerns from kennels and brewers and the airport noise, but data center noise is unique, and it's important that this ordinance focus on the data centers. There's 60 of them in Ashburn, and we need to make sure that they are focused on. First of all, the proposed noise standards does not reasonably regulate tonal noise. Section 5-1507C focuses on the volume and does not focus on the tonal sound that can be heard throughout the neighboring residential community. According to the Hessler Associates provision in the report, they said that these tonal sounds are even more irritating than other sounds, and they prescribe a penalty of 5 dBA to be subtracted from the limit if a tone is prominent, pronounced, or easily discernible. I submit to you all that the sound is discernible and should be regulated accordingly. The consultant further noted that this can be performed by outside acoustical consultants if needed. I would recommend that that be implemented. We also note that the emergency situations are overly broad as these data centers constantly are being pulled off the grid in accordance with their contracts with Dominion Power. And one of my fellow residents, I believe, will address some technical concerns about measuring this data center noise in the warmer weather and colder weather. And the proposed amendment grandfathered concerns are also very disconcerting at this point because the grandfathering of these existing data centers now does not state. It says that the established uses will be subject to noise standards in effect at the time, and there's no definition of when that established use actually is implemented. As data centers grow and expand, those existing uses will also grow and expand, and we believe that it is both unfair and unreasonable to allow data centers having noise standards from long ago to grow and expand and be not subject to these new, more tailored noise standards. We thank you for your time and your fair consideration of these, and we look forward to working with the county. I personally invite anybody, you know, into my neighborhood, especially to me, to hear this sound if you need to.
Thank you, Ms. Lindgren. Our next speaker will be Mital Gandhi, followed by Debbie Ickert.
Thank you to the commission. My name is Mital Gandhi. My wife and my two little boys live in the Regency as well. I wanted to take a moment to really address you all because there will be folks here that are here right now that won't speak as well. But we want you to know how important this ZOAM is specifically to the Regency. We have lived there for the last 2.5 years now, and we can continue to hear. And I'll be very quite frank with you. It's a specific data center. It's a digital realty data center. And I can't tell you how many times I come from a community where we used to live where we pick up the phone sometimes and we call them. We say, hey, look, how can we work together, right? We all want the same thing. I hope Digital Realty doesn't want to emit this sound that DuPont Fabros doesn't, that other data centers don't. But they continue to do, and they shield behind the current laws. And they say, well, let's wait till the ZOAM sort of plays out, and then we'll see where we end up. And we need your protection. I am pro-business. I know this whole community is pro-business. No one's trying to hinder development. What we're trying to do is to make sure we can live in harmony. And I truly hope, Kate is here, and there's a few other folks who will talk on the technical points, but if you just take a few moments and come in our community, you'll see the sound that we're talking about. And And the Heschler report, I think they recommend going down 5 decibels, if I'm not mistaken. We agree with that. You know, again, we are not, we are pro-business, but we just want to live in harmony with them. And there are other folks here that won't speak, but we want you to know how big of an issue this is, not only for the Regency, but for the entire Ashburn community. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gandhi. Debbie Eckert, to be followed by Steve Eckert.
Good evening. My name is Debbie Eckert, and I'm on the HOA board of the Granada community. I live at 40483 Granada Preserve Place. First, I want to thank the county for beginning to implement noise standards in this county. It is greatly needed. My family and I live directly behind one of Loudoun County's largest sportsplex or stadiums with a parking lot suited for thousands of spectators. The noise that emanates from the stadium, parking lot, and festivals are a nuisance without exception. There are no landscape barriers, there's no sound walls, there's no restrictions on time for this massive complex and parking lot. This complex, with its massive parking, was constructed long after the existing residential neighborhood of Granada existed. Yet our community has zero protection against the plainly audible noise nuisance. Our hopes is that this implementation of the noise standards will help alleviate some of the plainly audible noises that my family, as well as our neighbors, hear each and every day and night, both inside and outside our homes. So again, thank you for this step.
Thank you, Ms. Eckert. Our next speaker is Steve Eckert, to be followed by Conrad Varblo.
Good evening. I'm Steve Eckert. I too live at 40483 Granada Preserve Place. The only thing I would add to the statement you just heard is the fact that, and actually it was described tonight, the ambiguity in the code relative to how enforcement takes place is extremely concerning to the residents of Granada. Whether you call because of a particular auditable level of noise that's coming out of the stadium and you get sheriff's enforcement, or you call and the sheriff comes out and says, we don't enforce that, that's a zoning issue. And then zoning says, well, no, you know, that's codified, so that falls under the requirement to have the sheriff report. So the confusion relative to residents is very clear, and so how it's enforced leaves the residents at Granada basically totally vulnerable to no enforcement at all, with no place to really take their concerns or complaints. So from a resident's perspective, not really sure what to do when we have complaints about noise or consideration for how to handle it. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Mr. Eckert. Our next speaker is Conrad Varblo, followed by Robert Zatori.
Good evening. I'm Conrad Varblo, and I also live in the Regency, and I'm here to shift the conversation back to the data center noise issue, and I want to thank you, first of all, for considering updating the noise regulations. I'm here because I've lost a lot of sleep along with my neighborhood because of noise coming from the rooftops, presumably, of data centers. And tonight, before I came over here, I went outside and I just took a quick listen, and it was fairly quiet. It was unusually quiet, and it's also unusually warm. So I wanted to point out that in your measurements and in your readings and your considerations, it's important to consider the temperature and if there's a thermal inversion in the area. This is not anything I saw in the writings that I reviewed. And what happens on a warmer day, since sound travels more slowly through cold air, you get a refraction upward away from the stationary point source. When you have an inversion or something with a colder air lower, the sound emanates refracts downward, which is why you can hear with great pain every resonation from the top of a data center, even though you can't see it. You don't have line of sight to it, but the sound waves are curving and blanketing our entire neighborhood. So I just wanted to ask if that could be considered as part of the discussion as well, because most of the time I'm losing sleep is at night, and that's when things are the loudest. And during the day, it's not as noticeable, but it's still, the noise is still there. So I wanted to just mention that, not only for our benefit, but since there are so many data centers going into the county, that future residents may not have to endure a punishingly long night of some 60-odd hertz humming that is just not something you can drown out. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Varblow. Our next speaker will be Robert Satori.
Good evening. That's Satori, by the way. I am also a resident of the Regency and chair the, believe it or not, Noise Committee. And I think you heard from some of our neighbors here this evening. There are more of our neighbors here that you probably won't hear from. We've been having this dialogue now for the past couple of years on the noise ordinances. And I must say, the ZOAM has done a very good job of whittling out and honing down to some of the major issues. And in the form that it's in now is far better than it's ever been in. But I believe it needs still more improvement. And the improvement is with the permissible sound levels, particularly on the residential side. They were derived primarily when you read the prose about some of the ordinances that are from around us in the state of Maryland, Montgomery County, state of Virginia, state of Maryland, Fairfax, town of Leesburg, so on and so forth. There's 8 citations, as a matter of fact, in the report. And of the 8 citations, Loudoun is one, which is under review. 3 others are under review. That brings it down to 4. 1 was deemed unreasonable. That brings it down to 3. And 1, the state of Virginia has none. That brings it down to 2. So we're talking about 2 artifacts there that we're saying, here's the representation that these are in alignment with, and I submit they are not in alignment. I will also submit to you every one of those citations has a day and night limit, and what's being proposed here does not. The World Health Organization, the Environmental Protection Agency, as cited in the report, all have day-night limits, and they're all lower than what we're talking about here. As far as the data centers are concerned, I've heard much from the business community about making them economically viable, encouraging business in Loudoun County. Let me say this. I know from whence I talk. I've been in this business for 40 years. I've built 27 data centers. I know a little something about this. They do not need to be as noisy as the ones that are around the Regency. It will not cost very much money, especially for a company that just spent $1.8 billion acquiring another data center company to spend a couple of $100,000 to attenuate the noise. We're in this position because enforcement was confused, rules and regulations were not properly stated. It's time that this gets settled. We do not want to impose additional economic harm on data centers, but I, for one, spent $23,000 replacing the windows in my house so my 11-year-old could sleep at night. My neighbor sitting over there just had his windows replaced yesterday. The one to my right had his windows replaced as well. The citizens of this county should not be absorbing economic harm in order to promote business. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. That was our last speaker. Is there anybody else in the audience that would like to speak on this application tonight? Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Please come up to the dais, state your name, and at the end of your hearing, if you could fill out a speaker slip at the end of the dais. Thank you.
Hi. My name is Linda Schlosser, and I, too, live in the Regency. And I'll make this very short. I have a nice backyard. We like to spend a lot of time in the backyard. And this summer, we spent almost no time out there because it's so noisy. I had one evening where I had friends over, and my friend looked and she goes, "What is that noise? Do you live with that all the time? That's really annoying." That's how it is. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anybody else that would like to speak? Seeing none, the public hearing is now closed. Commissioner Rudicelli, this is a countywide application. Would you like to make a motion?
I will be moving to take it to work session. I think the residents who have spoken raised some valid issues, and I hope that you've made note of them, and that they would become part of the discussions at the upcoming work session. And beyond that, I don't really have anything else to say, as I will not be here after tonight. Tonight's my last night, so I really don't have much to say about this, but I do know it's a problem. It's been an ongoing problem. I'm hoping that it will get resolved, I look forward to the Planning Commission doing that. So I move that the Planning Commission forward ZOAM 2014-0006, the noise standards, to a Planning Commission work session for further discussion.
Motion is made and seconded by Commissioner Siska. Is there any comments? Commissioner Clancher.
Mr. Chairman, could I also ask some questions of staff?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I have a couple general areas, and we can follow up at the work session because I will be supporting the motion to go to work session. Regarding the comments about the enforcement mechanisms that we have, how many noise complaints do we get in a year? I'm not focusing this on data centers, just generally. And what would the impact be? Now I understand the sheriff's office is charged with it. What would the impact be on having zoning staff do it? And my immediate thinking is there are two potential impacts. Do we have the staff to do it? And second, the issue of timeliness. Are some of the complaints or concerns that are expressed by citizens something that's happening that they can hear in their backyard right now, and a sheriff's deputy needs to be there within 15 or 20 minutes to hear what's going on and may not be able to wait till sometime the following week during a business day to check out what's going on? The other question I have goes to some of the comments made by the folks from Regency that showed up this evening. I guess it was about 2, maybe 3 years ago now, the county undertook the development of a data center zoning ordinance that was specifically tailored towards that type of facility, and a significant part of our discussion related to noise impact. And my question is, the facilities that the citizens here tonight are talking about, do you know if they were permitted and built under the old method of having a special exception or under the new by right zoning ordinance, so we get a sense of how things are working? Finally, just a very broad question, but it is specific to the data center issues. My recollection of when we talked about how to mitigate noise impacts between data center developed properties and adjacent residential properties, there's really a lot of discussion about it. But we also acknowledged that Regency may have the largest contiguous border between an area being developed for data centers and an area of residential development. Is this something that is widespread, or is it focused and occurring in several very concentrated areas so that it may be possible to come up with a specific solution in those areas, or is this really a much more broad-based issue that is truly countywide? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Clancher. Are there any other questions or comments? Ms. Siska?
Thank you, Chairman Stallman. My first question is to staff, and that is whether you have looked at the Fairfax County zoning ordinance regarding noise. I think they just went through a similar process of looking at the zoning ordinance.
Yes.
And when did they adopt theirs?
Last month.
Oh, just last month.
Yes.
Okay, so there hasn't been a lot of time to evaluate.
No,
okay.
They will be they told the board that their commission that they would go back to, I'm sorry, their board, they'd go back to review the standards, I think, in the spring of next year, 2016.
They do have a review process in place then?
That was what they were asked to do, yes.
Now, do they have the same situation where they don't have sheriff, or they have a police department and the sheriff's, but do they work off codified as well as the zoning ordinance for noise?
Loudoun County, just to be clear, there's a codified ordinance. There always has been a codified ordinance with regard to excessive sound, and there's just noise standards, and we've had the noise standards for many years. Loudoun is one of the few places that have the codified and the zoning ordinance. Fairfax only has one. They only have a codified ordinance.
They only have the codified.
Most jurisdictions in Virginia only have a codified ordinance.
So why do we have both? And does it make it more simplistic for enforcement just to have a codified?
I can't answer why. It was here when I got here 15 years ago. It was in the 1993 ordinance. So
it might be worthwhile going back and looking at it. And one
it wasn't
of the
in the 72, but it was in the 93.
It was in the 93.
It came about in the 93 ordinance.
Okay.
You could certainly combine the two and have some sort of, I know with Fairfax, they have, it says in their codified ordinance who will do the regulating. So, I mean, that's something we could.
And that seems like the big issue in Loudoun. You know, you don't know whether to call zoning or the sheriff's office, and they will pass it on to another department, and in the end, many times nothing is done. So I think that would be a relevant question if we could look at why indeed we came up with the secondary ordinance in 1993 and whether it would simplify things for enforcement to have only one. And could we get a copy, or could the Planning Commission have a copy of the codified ordinance at work session? If it is available then. And then, Mr. Chairman, I want to suggest to the commission at work session to possibly look at this entire issue more as a subcommittee type of topic. Commissioner Rudicelli and Commissioner Clancher will remember how much time we put into, for example, the limestone overlay district and how complicated that was and how much time we spent just studying limestone in the karst areas. And there's so much involved with the science or the phenomena of noise. And the speakers are absolutely correct. You know, temperature, wind direction, wind speed, humidity even, science teacher talking, as a will affect noise. It's a very, very complicated issue. So I think if, when it goes to work session, or if it could go to subcommittee, if we look at that and to try to understand exactly how this works and listen to an acoustical consultant, if he could be brought to the committee, and even if someone could come from the data centers to speak on how what they do to try to muffle the noise, I think that would be helpful to the commission. And lastly, following up on Commissioner Clancher's concern about the complaints, could we get a list of the complaints, let's say for the past 5 years? And when you pull those, would it be possible to see where they emanate from? You know, do they go to the sheriff's office and their disposition afterwards, or zoning, or is there crossover?
So are you asking us to get information from the sheriff's office, which is going to be different? So
it
we'll have to contact
like a,
the sheriff's office and
yes.
ask them their complaints, and then we're going to have to do it over on our enforcement side, and I'm assuming we can do that.
Yes, and I assume there's going to be crossover, right? So, however you can put it together. I'm sure that's a complicated process. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Siska. Did you get all that, Teresa?
One clarification, if I could. You're asking for the codified ordinance for Loudoun County, not Fairfax County, or which county's codified ordinance did you want to see?
Oh, for Loudoun.
Okay.
For Loudoun.
Okay. Are there any questions or comments? Mr. Clancher.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. There's one thing that I forgot to ask about. Our first speaker this evening mentioned the concept of tonal noise, which I'm assuming means a noise of a specific frequency or a frequency range, which is particularly difficult for people to handle and particularly disturbing. If we can get some further information on sort of where that comes from, what it's like, and how it can be addressed. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Clancher. Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, the motion is to send to work session. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Okay, motion passes 6-0-3 with Commissioner Ryan, Commissioner Douglas, and Commissioner Dunn absent. Thank you very much. Our next application is special exception 2015-35, 1006 Ruritan Circle Restaurant. Ms. Burkett, welcome.
Good evening, Judy Burkett with the Loudoun County Planning and Zoning Department. The application before you is a special exception to convert an existing historic residence into a restaurant for 20-seat capacity. The subject property is located on a third of an acre site within Sterling in the Commercial 1 Zoning District. The application is subject to the 1972 zoning ordinance, and the property falls within the Route 28 taxing district. There is an existing 1860 residence on the property. It is 3,000 square foot in size, but the applicants are only proposing to occupy 1,200 square feet of the first floor for the restaurant. The subject property is located on the north side of Ruritan Circle and east of the WNOD Trail. Surrounding properties are all commercial, warehouse, industrial, with the exception of a place of worship to the south of the subject property. The specific request is a special exception for a restaurant use with a capacity of 20 seats, a maximum of 1,200 square feet, and the applicant is proposing to add 5 additional parking spaces. Those are located here. They would be removing the existing entrance and driveway in order to construct the VDOT required commercial entrance shown here. Regarding land use, the application is consistent with the land use policies of the revised general plan. The property is located within the suburban policy area, specifically the Sterling community. The area is planned for Route 28 business uses, which are office and flex industrial uses supported by ancillary services and personal services such as the restaurant. So while this particular restaurant is not an employment generator itself, staff is supporting the use because it will provide services to support the existing surrounding business uses. Further, revised general plan policy does also support the adaptive reuse of historic buildings. During the referral process, we had 2 primary issues that we discussed. First, we wanted to make sure that the existing well on the subject property would only be used for irrigation and that the property is properly served by public water and sanitary sewer, and that is correct. Secondly, we discussed the appropriate timing for installation of sidewalks. On this particular property, given the small size of the restaurant, it was decided to accept the applicant's proposal to reserve an access easement at this time and to construct the sidewalk at such time that one of the adjacent property owners constructs a sidewalk to connect to. During the Planning Commission briefing, there were questions raised regarding the potential to increase the seating capacity and also regarding Carolina Barbecue in Ashburn. We checked they do have between 30 and 35 bicycles accommodated on their bike racks. And I'd like to tell you that we have continued to work with the applicant. And if you refer to the green handout, we have new motions and revised conditions of approval. And if I could just walk you through those. Thank you, Nancy. The 3 things that we have worked with the applicant to resolve to try to address some of your briefing comments. The first one, we've revised condition number 2 and that's regarding seating capacity. Staff worked with the Office of the County Attorney, and we developed a condition that would allow them to exceed the 20 seats shown on the specs plat, and that's only if at site plan they could demonstrate that they are complying with all the regulations of the ordinance, specifically parking, because that's our primary issue with this site. So they could exceed it up to a maximum of 40 if they can provide the parking and other zoning regulations at the time of site plan. The second change, we did delete condition number 4 because since the briefing, the zoning department did administratively approve the applicant's buffer request to allow the existing trees around the perimeter of the property to serve as their buffers. So that condition was no longer needed. We deleted that. In its place, we added the new condition demonstrating that the applicant has agreed to install an additional bike rack, bringing their total bicycles accommodated to 20. And they'll do that within 90 days of approval of the special exception. So in closing, staff is recommending approval with these revised conditions. We have a revised motion for you as well. And the applicant's in agreement with the revised conditions, and we are recommending that you forward it to the Board of Zoning Appeals for approval.
The Board of Zoning Appeals?
Yes, sir. Under the 1972 zoning ordinance, this use will go to the Board of Zoning Appeals.
Excellent. Thank you, Ms. Burkett. Does the applicant have a presentation?
Good evening, Chairman Salmon, members of the board. I do have a presentation this evening. It'll be fairly brief. Before I get started, I'd like to say that the affidavit for mailing and posting has been submitted. And I would like to wish all of you a happy holidays. For those of you that we won't see next year, certainly appreciated of working with you over the past several years and look forward to working with you again in the future. The application this evening is a fairly straightforward application. As Judy mentioned, we've talked about a number of different issues. This is an adaptive reuse application for what was an existing home that was constructed circa 1860. It's about a block or so away from what was originally known as the Alexandria Loudoun and Hampshire Railroad, which was constructed initially in 1855. This area where this house is located was originally known as Guilford. It's now known as Sterling, as most everyone recognizes it. There's a number of different homes and some churches in this area, which really create a nice historical fabric in this area. And this is kind of hopefully a start to things that might change in the future for this area. We really hope that other businesses around this area will reuse their existing homes and churches for some other purpose other than what is out there today, which really has become a more industrialized area. These are a couple of pictures of the interior of the home, which is being proposed to be converted to a restaurant. It's a very homey feel to it. A lot of the original pieces of the home are preserved as much as possible. You can see the dining room in the foreground. There's actually a kitchen in the background that's been upgraded to full standards in accordance with Loudoun County Health Department. This is the porch area that's off to the western portion of the house, faces a very nice yard. There was a question about outdoor seating. There's a picnic table that serves as the outdoor seating for this site. So there's really not a whole lot outside, but there's a very nice yard to enjoy there. The existing site includes a gravel driveway, which accesses Rural 10 Circle here. This area here is all new, and it's required essentially because there's a separation issue here. There's another driveway off-site located right here. We attempted to get an interpartial access to this driveway. We just weren't unable to do that, so it's requiring us to have an additional access point here. As Judy mentioned, parking is without question the number one issue on this application. We would love to have as many seats as possible, up to 40. The challenge will be accommodating the additional parking. There is a provision in the 72 ordinance that allows for off-site parking that requires a special exception through the Board of Zoning Appeals. So we hope to avoid that by maximizing as much parking on the site as possible. But if, in fact, we do want to add more seats to the site and more square footage as part of the updated conditions, then we would certainly just have to accommodate the parking. In conclusion, this is an application that our clients, Bill Ewing and Jackie Anderson, have worked a few years on, actually. It's been a challenging process for them. It's been a financially draining process as well as a time-draining process. They look forward to the opportunity to actually be in full compliance with the 72 ordinance and have this restaurant running in full capacity. With that, I'd like to just reiterate Judy's comments that the plan supports this use at this location. Staff supports the use at this location. We are in agreement with the conditions that have been handed out to the Planning Commission this evening, and we would certainly appreciate and respectfully request your recommendation of approval so we can go to the Board of Zoning Appeals in January and hopefully finalize this process. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Romeo. Are there any questions of staff or the applicant? Commissioner Scheel.
What will the second story be used for?
It's essentially just used as extra space right now. There's furniture up there. There are rooms up there, but they are empty rooms, essentially.
Okay, nobody will be living there, I take it.
No, there is a provision in the 72 ordinance that allows for a permitted caretaker to be, or a caretaker to live in the residence if they live upstairs and there's a business below. That also requires a parking space, which we don't have the ability to afford. So that's something that may happen in the future, but at this point, it's not part of the application.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Scheel. Any other questions? Okay. We have one speaker signed up. I'm going to not get this right. Miroslav Lonkar.
Good evening. My name is Miroslav Lonchar, and I'm a resident of Sterling, 46484 Hollymead Place. And I am here with my wife as well as another friend. We're all residents of Sterling, and we are here tonight to support this proposal. I want to say that I'm in favor of the request to put a restaurant on Ruritan Road. This once appealing historic section of Old Sterling Park has had many of its historical buildings, including the old train station, destroyed or demolished over the years. What remains is a largely unappealing hodgepodge of overgrown vacant lots and industrial buildings, the Ruritan Hall, and a few scattered old homes. I have thought that this area of Sterling Park should be renovated and restored to its former glory. Much like the town of Herndon has done with their station there, where some of the things that have built around it. So establishing a nice restaurant in this area would be a favorable addition to this area and perhaps a first step to maybe more of such actions and revitalization of the area, which would be great for this particular community, which if you're familiar with this area, you will know that anything like this would be very welcome by the local community, which I tend to believe that they would support something like an international restaurant. And, of course, it would benefit the community of the local area. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Lonchar. This was the final speaker for this evening, for this application. Is there anybody in the public, in the audience that would like to speak on this application? Yes, please. Please stand up, state your name, and when you're done, if you could, please fill out a speaker slip to my left.
Sure. Good evening, everybody. My name is Kenny Membreno. I'm a 30-year resident of Sterling. I've ridden past that house for the past 30 years since I've been able to ride a bike with my father. I guess what I have is a question. What will actually be done to the house, to the kitchen? Will it be knocked down? Will anything happen to the exterior of the house? Nothing. So I just want to say I'm kind of happy that a business is coming in because it attracts people to come there. So I'm all for that. I just want to make sure that, you know, that he's aware, or the company that's going to come in and do this is aware of the historical significance of the area. That's it.
Great. Okay. Thank you for your comments. If you could please fill out a speaker slip at the end. Is there anybody else in the public that would like to speak? Seeing none, the public hearing is now closed. Mr. Romeo, would you like a few minutes for a response?
Just a quick comment, Mr. Chairman, in response to most recent comment. The house will remain in its current condition. The interior has already been upgraded. The pictures I showed you are the upgraded interior. And the couple that does own the property intends to maintain the historical aspect of the property.
Thank you, Mr. Romeo. Are there any other questions of the staff or the applicant? Okay, seeing none, this is in the Sterling District. Ms. Siska.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to preface my motion with a few comments. The journey for this application has, as Mr. Romeo said, been a very long and incredibly tedious one. I think it was a few years ago, I can't even remember how long ago, I had heard from the applicants, Ms. Anderson and Mr. Ewing, and it is just remarkable to find a couple that has such a love for old things and wanted to preserve this beautiful, beautiful property. And through the help of Brown Morton from the Heritage Commission, who I would very much like to thank, Mr. Morton worked with the couple to learn more about the house. It is, as you can see in the pictures that have been presented, a lovely home. It is a lovely atmosphere, not only the porch, but when you walk in that front door, it just says, come in, sit down, and let us just, you know, serve you and take care of you. You will not want to leave this beautiful place. Next door was the old schoolhouse, which has become a commercial property. It is for sale. And I want to mention that I had spoken to Supervisor-elect Sains last week and mentioned the importance of this particular area, especially when the comprehensive plan is looked at, because this is like a little niche that everyone has been talking about, but we just don't know quite how to try to preserve it, but at the same time have the development which will eventually occur in the Route 28 corridor in this particular district, in this area. So I would ask the commission to please keep that in mind in future years, that this is a very prominent area that doesn't get enough attention, unfortunately. But through the hearts of these very good people, I think we have a little bit of an instigator. I also want to mention that small cafe that is there has the best Mediterranean food and the most outstanding Turkish press coffee in all of Loudoun. Okay, so an opportunity to have some wonderful refreshment as well as relaxation. With that, I move that the Planning Commission forward special exception 2015-0035 1006 Rotan Circle Restaurant to the Board of Zoning Appeals with a recommendation of approval subject to the conditions of approval dated December 15, 2015 and based on the findings for approval in December 15, 2015 Planning Commission Public Hearing Staff Report.
There's a motion and a second by Commissioner Clancher. Any other discussions? Okay. Before we finish, I'd like to thank the applicant for coming out. I think this is an excellent application, an excellent reuse of space in a great area that hopefully will get some more reuse. And I'm really excited to have another good business in the area. So with that, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions. Great. Motion passes 7-0-2. Thank you very much, and good luck on your business. Our next application is ZMAP 2015-5, ZCPA 2013-0002, Dulles 28 Center. Mr. Snyder, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. This application you previously heard in October. It has been for you again to advertise district modifications to the planned PDCC Regional Commercial Center District. Just to orient you, this was regarding the Dulles 28 Center project, west of Route 28, north of Waxpool Road, and the subject area is generally outlined in red. The application or the offending application with the requested zoning modifications is identified in yellow. Quick overview of the project again, plan amendments to previous approved concept development plans and proffers, specifically dealing with office building height west of Pacific Boulevard, office triggers, hotel triggers for development west of Pacific Boulevard, allowing additional land for auto uses adjacent to Route 28, and also triggers for upgrades to stormwater management facilities. The ZMAP, as I mentioned, the area identified in yellow, is to be incorporated into the larger project. We had previously noted in October that a right-in, right-out access along Pacific Boulevard was in conflict with planned intersection improvements at Waxpool Road and Pacific Road. Since you heard the application, the applicant has agreed to remove that right-in, right-out, and also dedicate right-of-way to facilitate the intersection improvements. We continue to recommend approval, having found that the proposal is consistent with the previous development plans approved for the property. Be happy to answer any questions.
Marchant, are there any questions of the staff at this time? Okay. Is there a presentation from the applicant?
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, my name is Lou Canonico with Christopher Consultants, representing the applicant. For the record, I have presented the staff with the affidavit of posting and notification. Really don't have a presentation. Basically, what happened, there was zoning modifications that would ensure that the one-acre parcel that was being rezoned could be integrated into the overall development without requiring setbacks and buffer yards. Those didn't get advertised before the last hearing, so that's why we're back here tonight. I believe at the last hearing, the commission sent the application forward with a unanimous recommendation. I'm hoping they will do so again tonight. I would like to take this opportunity as the four-year term of this commission is coming to an end. I've had the pleasure of appearing before you with various hats. I do want to thank all of you for the tremendous hard work and dedication that you have shown to the citizens of Loudoun County, and we're very fortunate to have dedicated servants like you all. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Canonico. That is very nice. Are there any questions of the staff or the applicant? Yes, Ms. Siska.
Marchand, do we know what improvements will be happening in that entire corridor to alleviate the transportation mess that is there and when that might be forthcoming?
I believe the construction plans are, if not approved, will be approved shortly. Primarily expands the area of the intersection, provides additional dual left turn lanes, southbound on Pacific onto eastbound Waxpool Road. Okay. It also continues lanes west of Pacific Boulevard, closer to Loudoun County Parkway. And there's a separate project, I think, that will allow the expansion to cross the creek and make it all the way down to Loudoun County Parkway.
So. And if approved, will the build out of this particular application and those improvements be worked out so that there's full coordination?
That's already happening.
It's already okay, great. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other questions of staff or the applicant? Seeing none, this is in the Broad Run district since the I'm sorry. Are there any speakers for this application? Seeing none, the public hearing is now closed. This application is in the Broad Run district. Our Broad Run supervisor is absent. Mr. Rudicelli, would you do us the favor?
Yes, I will. I was very pleased to see that right-in, right-out went away, and I know that if Mr. Ryan were here tonight, he would be very pleased with that as well, and that the right-of-way has been given. So all those little issues have been tidied up with this, so thank you very much, Mr. Canonico. I move that the Planning Commission forward ZMAP 2015-0005 and ZCPA 2013-0002, the Dulles 28 Center, to the Board of Supervisors with a recommendation of approval subject to the proffer statement dated October 30, 2015, and based on the findings in the December 15, 2015 Planning Commission public hearing staff report.
It's a motion by Commissioner Rudicelli. Is there a second? Seconded by Commissioner Siska. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions. Great. Motion passes 7-0-2 with Commissioner Ryan absent and Commissioner Douglas absent. Thank you very much. Our next application is Special Exception 2015-34, Davis Church Self-Storage. Mr. Griffiths, welcome.
Good evening and thank you. My name is Joe Griffiths. I'm here to discuss Davis Church Self-Storage Special Exception 2015-0034. The applicant is seeking special exception approval for a warehousing indoor storage unit on a storage use on an approximately 1.1-acre site requiring the consolidation of two parcels. The site is located in the southwestern quadrant of the intersection of Davis Drive and Church Road in the Sterling suburban community. It is situated in the Route 28 business area and zoned C1 commercial under the 1972 zoning ordinance. This, like the previous case, because this is subject to the 1972 zoning ordinance, final determination on approval will go to the Board of Zoning Appeals rather than the Board of Supervisors. The site is surrounded by flex and retail uses to the south, retail to the west and north, and the Trailside townhome community to the east. It currently contains a landscaping business and a late 19th century Gothic Revival era church and is accessed by Shaw Road in the northwest corner of the site. The applicant is proposing a four-story, 89,000 square feet self-storage building to serve nearby residential and business demand. The building will be 45 feet tall with a 10-foot step back above 35 feet on all four sides. The exterior will include an articulation of masonry, metal paneling, and glass. And the site will be accessed by a proposed right-in, right-out entrance onto Davis Drive, with this proposal closing the existing entrance on Shaw Road. The subject property is located in the Route 28 business area outlined on this map, which proposes a combination of low to medium density office and flex industrial uses, supported by open space, civic uses, and employment and supportive retail. This is not an employment generator itself, however, it will provide a needed service for nearby businesses and residents. The Route 28 business area calls for a floor area ratio or FAR between 0.4 and 1 and 1.0, and buildings of four stories, at least four stories. The proposed FAR for this project is 1.83. While this exceeds the envisioned FAR for this area, self-storage use places less demand on the traffic network, with this specific case producing 67% fewer daily trips than a by-right C1 commercial use. With this in mind, staff concludes it is reasonable to permit an increase in FAR in this case. As mentioned earlier, the building will have an articulated exterior of masonry, insulated metal paneling, glass, and polished aluminum, and be designed to resemble surrounding flex office and commercial uses. 30% of the total site will be dedicated to open space with a picnic area. This is well above the Route 28 business area's 15% requirement. Here is an image of the church, which was constructed in the late 19th century. From 1879 to 1983, the property was in the hands of the same Sterling Methodist congregation. In 2009, the Virginia Department of Historic Resources, as part of a 106 review process completed in response to the Church Road widening project, determined that the church was ineligible for listing on the National Register of Historic Places. County staff uses the National Register eligibility as the standard in determining which preservation strategy to pursue. The Heritage Preservation Plan notes that priority heritage sites in the county should be potentially eligible for listing in the register. Following a recent conversation with the project manager for that 106 review of DHR, there are three reasons why the church was denied eligibility. One, it is no longer in its historic context, the village of Guilford, which was also deemed ineligible for listing in that same study. The Heritage Preservation Plan specifically notes that heritage resources should be situated in their historic setting. Two, there's a higher threshold for religious buildings getting on the register. Being associated with patterns of community development is not enough. Churches must derive their primary significance from architectural or artistic distinction of historical importance. And based on their review, this church did not meet that threshold. And finally, the exterior of the building contains modern materials such as vinyl siding and an asphalt shingle roof. During the application process, staff also requested that the applicant complete a survey to determine if the site has unmarked graves associated with that cemetery. The applicant submitted such a survey in October, and it concluded that no unmarked graves exist on the site. Also at staff request, the applicant has agreed to salvage as many architectural elements from the church as possible and has engaged a Class A restoration contractor to assist in that process, although this is currently not a condition. You should have received an update just prior to the hearing tonight from Jane Covington, a former member of the HDRC, who is that Class A contractor who they have engaged. As requested at the briefing, the applicant submitted the following photos of the church interior. Upon further discussion in the past few weeks, the applicant has indicated to staff that the church could potentially be restored. However, the applicant also argues that it would be cost prohibitive to do so, and it could not be reasonably integrated into the design for the self-storage structure. The applicant has also invested considerable time and effort into researching the salvaging and reuse potential of the building materials. The applicant is prepared to explain this topic in greater detail. During the referral process, we also discussed some transportation topics. Staff was originally concerned about the right-in, right-out turn onto Davis Drive. Although the countywide transportation plan does not support direct access onto Davis Drive in this location, the mitigating circumstances of the current access on Shaw Road in the northwest corner, mainly its limited visibility for commercial use, and its narrowness, it's only 12 to 13 feet and cannot be widened due to the eastbound lane and guardrails of Church Road. These two factors led staff to accept the entrance with approval from the Virginia Department of Transportation, who is currently processing an access management exception request for that entrance because it is only 114 feet from the property entrance to the south, which their traditional standards would require 250 feet. But they are processing that request. Staff is also concerned about vehicles, especially larger trucks and moving vans, taking a U-turn on Davis Drive north at Church Road to access this right-in, right-out on Davis. Because of this, we discussed wayfinding with the applicant as part of the process. However, VDOT is now supporting a no-U-turn sign northbound on Davis at Church, and therefore wayfinding is no longer necessary. In response to another question at the briefing, the map on the right highlights the different routes available to customers accessing this site from the south. They could travel along Davis Drive north to drive past the site to a U-turn at Sterling Station Way. They could take Route 28 north to east on Church and then a right on Davis, or they could take Sterling Boulevard to a left on West Church Road and then a left on Davis. We also discussed whether or not there should be a sidewalk or shared-use path along the property line with on the Davis Drive side. While the countywide transportation plan calls for a shared-use path here, the applicant agreed to install, at staff request, to rather install a sidewalk in its place to preserve the existing street trees in that location, which are more mature trees, and you can see from this image. Also requested, the map on the right shows the pedestrian network in and around this site. You can see that the installed sidewalk up at the site, outlined in yellow, will connect to the crosswalk going across Davis Drive and the Trailside community to the east. However, there is no sidewalk to the south of the property of the subject property on Davis, on the western side of Davis Drive. Staff, we're of the assertion that this that the use design and open space allotment of this project align with the Route 28 corridor plan. The recording and dismantling of the church is our assertion is the applicable Loudoun preservation policy in this situation, particularly because the church is not eligible for listing on the National Register of Historic Places. This application is generally consistent with a countywide transportation plan, and the use will generate significantly fewer trips and a by right use on the site, and it is in accordance with the 1972 zoning ordinance. Therefore, we recommend approval with conditions. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Griffiths. Does the applicant have an presentation?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is Robert Young. I'm the managing member of the Davis Church LLC. I'd like to make a very brief presentation. I'm going to go through this very briefly since you can read it, but we'd like to point out to the commission that we've worked hard with staff, and we want to thank staff for the hard work they put in over a period of several months to try to bring this forward to the Planning Commission and eventually, we hope, to the Board of Zoning Appeals. We've met all of the county requirements, in some cases exceeded them in areas that you see up here, operations, architecture, height, buffers, and so on. We understood very early in the process that this area has not seen a lot of development, and what it's seen has been very, you know, kind of one or two story. And there was a desire on the part of the county that there be some substantial height here, which we believe this will provide. A little history on this property. It's been owned by its current owner for over 30 years. Around 10 or 12 years ago, when Davis Drive and Church Road were widened, there were substantial takings on the property. But the most important thing is the access that it had to Shaw Road and Church Road was taken away, which very, very substantially devalued the property. Obviously, there's an alternative here to the use that we proposed, which would be a one- or two-story by-right little strip center, something like that. We would much prefer, and that's why we proposed something with some height and some architecture to it that we believe would enhance the business area. Self-storage as a use has undergone very substantial changes over the last 5 or 10 years. The kind of normal 30 or 40 year old one-story kind of sheds are no longer being built very much, certainly not in this general area. Rather, the new facilities tend to be 3 or 4 stories tall. They're conditioned. They have an attractive appearance. There are many many aspects of them that are much more desirable than they used to be. We believe what we proposed here will be a real addition to the area. I want to point out that the traffic that's generated, particularly at rush hour, by a self-storage facility is really minimal. People don't tend to go during rush hours. So the county ends up with a facility that's almost 90,000 square feet, will generate a very substantial net fiscal impact to the county, will provide a needed service, and we believe will be a real addition to the community. We met with all of our neighbors without exception, including the Trailside Homeowners Association across the street. We discussed street trees and lighting and things like that. We ended up, they had no objections whatever, nor did any of the other commercial neighbors. Rather, they were very delighted to see something happening on what's been a pretty neglected site for 30 years or so, as staff pointed out, being used mainly for landscaping, storage, and things like that. So it's, in fact, pretty ugly at this point in time. We've spent a lot of time looking at the existing structure and trying to imagine ways and explore ways in which it might be adaptively reused. Those efforts included an archaeological study, review of the state and county records with respect to when it was submitted for historical designation. We have talked extensively with the archaeological folks, as well as a gentleman who is a professional adaptive reuser, if you will. We were not able in any way to come up with a way to adaptively reuse that structure due to its location and the structure is in really, really bad shape and would cost many hundreds of thousands of dollars to try to restore even to a reasonable condition. It's important to note that when the church left, I believe in the 70s, they pretty much took everything of value with them to their new church, which of course was their right. But there isn't a lot left that could be used in any significant way. The contractor that we're working with feels that he can use flooring, some of the windows and doors perhaps, although they may not come out in whole because there's an awful lot of rot. We have submitted a an idea for kind of a historical marker using some of the, or using the five spires that were put on the front of the church sometime in the 20th century. We're not sure when. And we believe we can adaptively reuse those and put a nice piece of public art to memorialize this this structure. I think I will end it there and be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Mr. Young. Are there any questions for staff or the applicant? Yes, Ms. Siska.
Mr. Young, first of all, thank you for replying to me and sending me answers to the questions that I had sent. I could not get back to you. I think you sent the letter out at about 2:30, and I ran in here and opened it and saw it just before our public hearing started. But thank you for replying. What would be the timeline on the construction, and would it give a contractor that would be on the county list to be able to take it down in time and possibly, you know, store it somewhere else?
The probable timeline would be as follows. First of all, should we be recommended for approval and then receive approval from the BZA, we would then have to prepare and submit a site plan. If we could prepare that site plan in 30 or 45 days, it would be kind of a miracle. More realistically, it's kind of 60 days. So a hearing at the end of January, we might be able to submit our site plan at the end of March or early April. The site plan process nominally takes 2 to 4 months. I would be very surprised if it were less than 4 months. Because there are, you know, always some issues that come up. So the straightforward answer to your question is I'm pretty confident that it would be at least 6 months before we could begin construction. And don't forget, we also have a building permit to obtain before we can. So we're talking several months. Mm-hmm. That's plenty of time. We're working closely with a county-approved contractor who would have plenty of time to remove.
So that would be an early summer 2016 dismantling project.
The dismantling project could begin right away. There wouldn't be any reason to wait.
Well, that's assuming someone, you know, you or the county could find someone who might desire or want the structure. And my
You're
second
question. About the entire structure? I'm sorry to interrupt.
The church.
The entire church?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, okay, yes.
Right, except for the architectural feature, which you would
prefer. Well, you know, if they wanted those, we could work that out too.
Well, I think we want to. And you didn't show a picture of that architectural, very unique art display. There it is. Okay.
You can see on the right-hand side
Well, since you have that out, what would have to be done to preserve that? I mean, to save that and to preserve it? Or would it just be open to the elements?
This particular?
Yes.
Well, first we'd have to remove it, which we've examined it pretty closely. There is some rot, which we would have to. We have a craftsman who is very much looking forward to restoring this piece. Then it would have to be properly waterproofed, if you will, with some kind of clear sealants to preserve it. But we have no reason to believe that we can't preserve it for the indefinite future.
Okay, so many years in the future, you may have to put a lacquer or something on it.
Correct.
To try to preserve it. Okay. And with the county-approved contractor, was that a staff recommendation, or is that something that you were just suggesting?
Staff recommended one person, and that who they've worked very closely with.
Okay.
And then that person recommended the restoration contractor, who is also an approved contractor, and not only is willing to salvage the pieces and adaptively reuse them, but one of his main businesses is deconstructing old buildings and reconstructing them somewhere else.
Okay, and to staff, Mr. Griffiths, would that be someone then that you've already spoken to and that is interested in actually taking the structure?
We have not spoken.
A commitment of sorts?
We have not. We do not have that commitment from them. The name of the company, I can't remember, Wrights, something Wrights. We just heard about this yesterday. We would double-check that they are...
But there is interest, I take it.
We haven't spoken with them directly.
Okay.
But based on conversations with the applicant, yes, there is interest in that they would salvage this material and then they would sell it themselves.
They would sell the materials, not necessarily reconstruct the church and restore it. Is that correct?
That's correct. There is no commitment to deconstruct the church. The gentleman in question, his company is named Salvage Rights, and his name is Craig Jacob. As I said, his main business, if you look at his website, right, is deconstructing. He has made no commitment whatever to deconstruct the church, okay, only to salvage materials.
Have you looked also at like oldhouses.com? Have you thought about putting the house up for sale for deconstruction and then restoration somewhere else?
We would be pleased to put it up for free rather than for sale. A dollar would work fine.
Well, that would just be...
We would be pleased to commit
to
doing that. A suggestion.
Okay. All right. And, okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner Sisco. Are there any other questions of staff or the applicant? Commissioner Scheel.
The county plan, revised general plan, says that Loudoun, I'm quoting, Loudoun County seeks the preservation of the county's cultural and scenic character by the conservation of archaeological sites and historic structures and their settings. To quote from the Virginia Department of Historic Resources regarding this historic building, quote, "The church is an excellent and unique example of a vernacular interpretation of the Gothic Revival style." The survey notes the architectural details, such as the pointed arch lancet windows, original window glass, decorative molding, corner bell tower, and I might add the imitation organ pipes, which you were talking about, which represent the five books of Moses. This building is the crown of any Sterling or Guilford district that has been spoken of many times in this meeting. We were talking about preserving the school, the restaurant, and now we're talking about tearing down a landmark building, the oldest house of worship in eastern Loudoun County, a building that dates from 1870 and 1880 and is in good condition. Even the county admits it's in good condition. I think it would be criminal to get rid of that building. It is on an important intersection, and it's probably Sterling's most important structure. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Scheel. Are there any other questions of staff or the applicant? Yes, Commissioner Blackburn.
I'd be happy to salvage those windows for you.
We accept.
Go get them. You got like till 10 o'clock. Okay. There's nobody signed up to speak for a public hearing. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak? Sir, please come up, state your name, fill out a speaker slip when you're completed.
Hello, my name is Kenny Membreno. I spoke earlier on the roots and restaurant. This one angers me. This makes me mad. I've been around, like I stated before, I'm from Sterling, and I don't want to see our historic district torn down. I've ridden past this church since I was a little kid, and I've always wondered who or what people of historic significance have been in attendance of it. I don't. It looks horrible. I mean, it doesn't look horrible. It does. It looks old. It looks run down, but it's still beautiful. It's still a very beautiful church, and I feel like I hold. I've been a part of Sterling for 30 years. I hold stake in what happens to it. Sterling has gone through a big change. We've gotten black eyes from all the violence that's happened, and the culture's changing. But don't let us lose our history. That district is home to the Ruitton restaurant. It's home to the rec center where my mom used to sign me up for baseball. It's even the home, and it said that President Buchanan used to live there. And there's no marker or anything showing where he lived at. It's the home of the Ruitton Circle. It's where the WOND train came through. And if you guys know, the WOND was used by people in D.C. that wanted to escape the busy life and have picnics and stuff, or maybe attend church, maybe this church. So there needs to be some kind of study. I refuse to believe that this is not a historic site. I refuse to believe that. Now, just because I'm the kind of person that likes to know where I'm from. I looked at a map recently, dated from 1912. There, I'm the kind of person that likes to ask, you know, why is Parkview named Parkview? Why is Sully Road named Sully Road? Why is Potomac View called Potomac View? And it's obvious if you look at this map. And then lastly, one of the roads was called Church Road. It's obvious that Parkview was named Parkview because it was a view of the park. Sully Road was because it was a road that led down to Sully Plantation. Potomac View because it went down to Potomac View. Church Road because there's a church on it. Now I ask you, basically, I mean, do not destroy the landmark that probably influenced the name of the road. We have a chance to save it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McGrandall. Mr. McGrandall was the only person that was signed up to speak. Is there anybody else that would like to speak? Yes, sir. Please stand up, state your name, and fill out a speaker slip when you've completed.
I'm Bill Ewing, and with Jackie Anderson, we own the subject property on Ruitton Circle we discussed earlier. I hold out hope. I don't know what the Department of Historic Resources has kind of against the area, but again, when you look around Sterling, you see where it's going. That little enclave has a historic feeling that I think we can still save. There are several properties adjoining ours that we like to imagine can someday be a small historic district that's brought, you know, modernized and been commercially viable. I echo his comments about Church Road needing a church on it. And my understanding of Guilford was that it was anchored by these two churches, the Baptist Church and the Methodist Church. I just want to state that I wish we could do what we can to maintain the historic feel, what little of it remains, because it'll be more valuable as time goes by.
Thank you, Mr. Ewing. Is there anybody else that would like to speak on this application? Yes, ma'am. If you could state your name, fill out a speaker slip.
Good evening. My name is Julie Clark. I live in Trailside. And one thing I would like to dispute in the presentation was at the HOA meeting when they presented the building, I wouldn't say there were no objections, but there were concerns. One about the demolition of the historical church, but also the height of the new building and how it will overpower all other buildings and residences in the area. It will just be a monstrosity to look at. I'm sad to think that this church will be taken down. I will have to change my directions to Friends. Instead of turn right at the cute little church, it'll be turn right at the huge self-storage, where just up the road to the north of that location, there are several properties for sale on Atlantic, which would be ideal for self-storage as well, which would have easier access in and out. And I agree with the other gentleman who wanted to keep the integrity of the area intact. And I believe that's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Clark. Is there anybody else in the audience that would like to speak on this application? Seeing none, the public hearing is now closed. Would the applicant like a few minutes to respond to the public comments?
Yes, if you don't mind, I'd like to take just a couple of minutes. First of all, with respect to the last point on the height of the building, as soon as we can, that's as close as we can get. Well, the point being the height, there it is. As you can see on the top of this slide, the height of the building is roughly the same as the height of the trailside townhomes. I wasn't at the meeting, so I can't address whether that the height came up. There was certainly discussion of preserving the trees, which we worked hard with staff to do. Honestly, I don't believe this building is going to be looming over anything. The second issue is a minor historical one. That is, it's my understanding that Church Road is named for the Guilford Church as opposed to this particular church. Maybe it has to do with a bunch of churches being on the road at one time. I don't know. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Young. Are there any other further comments of staff or the applicant? Ms. Siska.
Mr. Griffiths, what is the height that's proposed compared to what the height of the church is and also to the Alpine Ski?
I don't have that direct comparison. The height is 45 feet with after the setbacks above 35. I don't have the direct comparison to the surrounding.
Okay, 45 feet. So the townhomes, I don't think, are 45. 35, yeah. 33. Do we have the exact height of the storage center?
The townhouses are 35 feet to the midpoint of the roof.
Mm-hmm.
So in reality, there's something a bit above 40 feet to the peak of the roof. And we're 45 feet with the top floor, as you can see, ghosted. So we step back 10 feet all around, and we have designed it from an architectural point of view, so it kind of fades away. I don't think it would even be visible from across, you know, if you're standing on the sidewalk looking up, I don't think you'll see the fourth floor.
Mr. Young, just for clarification, if you could point to the edge of the building on the top picture, farther back. Yeah, yes, right there, where the little green thing is. What's the height of that at that point?
35 feet.
And then the height at the white spot is 45 feet.
Okay. That's correct. The top of the white.
At the edge of the building, it's 35 feet.
Correct. Okay. And then we step back 10 feet around all four sides.
And so when you say the midpoint of a...
20 feet. We step back 20 feet on all four sides.
And so when you talk about a townhome and you talk about the midpoint, there's two architects around here I should probably ask instead. But when you talk about the midpoint, it's from the top of the second floor to the top of the tip of the roof, it's halfway in between.
That's 35 feet, approximately.
Halfway between the tip of the roof and the
correct.
And the top of the second floor.
Correct.
So this is 35 feet.
Oh, okay. Oh, halfway.
Okay, got it. Okay. Perfect. Okay. Sorry, Ms. Siska, I just wanted clarification.
No, that's, I'm glad you asked that question. That clarifies that. And, well, this is more of a comment, but many of you know the old stone house on Route 7 as you're going west into Leesburg. And that particular house, I remember our former supervisor, Joan Rokas, being very involved in it. And it must have moved, you would know, Commissioner Scheel, 125 feet, if that much? Very, very short distance. And I know that KSI, the developer, back there had donated about $20,000, and the county had to come up with about $220,000. Well, I don't think we have that kind of money now. I'm sure we don't, to move it a very short distance. So historic structures, whether they can go on to the National Historic Register or not, are really suffering in this county. I have a question for the applicant, and there was a letter that was sent to Ms. Seibentritt from with the Historic Commission, but Mr. Griffiths, actually, you received a copy. I'm not sure if Mr. Young did, from Jane Covington Motion. Okay, now, does she do then the, she was
she did the
contacted by you to do the report? Okay,
she
all right.
She did the on-site inspection.
Okay, so
our
we,
request.
Yes, and she seems very reputable, you know, with all the certifications for a contractor's license and also knowing all about rehab, tax credits, and heritage preservation. And she makes a very important statement in her letter. She says, Loudoun County Heritage Register, as proposed in Loudoun's Heritage Preservation Plan, could be an appropriate tool for preservation if coupled with an optional zoning overlay for the protection of structures. And I think that's where we really have a problem with the structures that are coming to us, especially in my district. Quantifiable standards measured against local criteria would enable the county to include additional structures to the register. So I just wanted to make that point for the record since we got a copy of the letter.
Thank you, Ms. Siska. Anything further? Commissioner Rudicelli.
Being someone who spends a tremendous amount of time around old buildings, I find myself troubled when a project such as this comes in, which albeit is a very nice project, is going to displace something which should be, in my mind, protected and unfortunately has not been protected and has sat for apparently 30 years without, you know, being cared for. So it gives me a great deal of pause. We have a very similar structure near where I live in the village of Waterford. I don't live in Waterford, but I live nearby, and it's the John Wesley Church, very similar. The Waterford Foundation worked with the owners of that property, the descendants of that church, to get financing and spent about $120,000 restoring it. It's money well spent today. The church is not heavily used, but it's used for weddings, it's used for meetings, it's used for at Christmas time for caroling and so on and so forth, and it's open, it's used during the fair. It gets, you know, a fair amount of use. If it were a more populated area, it could get more use, and it makes me think that, you know, this church could have a use. But it needs somebody to care about it. And so, you know, I think I probably would vote against this application because I would like to see that happen first, see somebody wake up and, you know, do something about this property. That's going to have to happen soon. That's all.
Thank you, Commissioner Rudicelli. If that's it, this is in the Sterling District. Ms. Siska.
I will tell you, as I've been hearing this, I've been going back and forth on this, and I'm going to make a motion which I didn't expect to make tonight. My initial motion was to recommend approval of the application, but I am going to move that the Planning Commission forwards Special Exception 2015-0034, Davis Church Self-Storage, to a work session for further discussion.
Okay, there's a motion for work session. Is there a second? Seconded by Commissioner Rudicelli. Any discussion?
Chairman Salmon, my reason for doing this is because I think the time is ripe for us to do something in that particular area. It has been neglected for a good long time. I see the critical action date being January for this application. I think there's another statement in Ms. Covington Motion's letter that speaks to my desire to move this into work session. She says, the vernacular structures such as the Davis Church carry enormous local significance and contribute to Loudoun's suburban landscape. Loudoun should develop the legal means to protect these structures so as to integrate them with an area slated for past-paced redevelopment such as Sterling. I don't know if this can be done in time, but I would be very heavy-hearted if I owned this property and allow this structure to fall, this being the oldest church structure in this part of the county. So I think morally I can't allow that to happen. And I think one of the speakers who spoke about there being many other areas where we can put storage centers, she is absolutely correct. So I do want to say that your application is, I think, excellent in every regard. And the presentation you gave me, kudos to you. However, it's on a parcel that gives us all much to ponder on.
Thank you, Commissioner Siska. Commissioner Dunn.
Thank you. I would rather be taking a vote on this tonight rather than sending this to work session to a new planning commission that may have different views, because I would just as soon recommend for denial tonight, because we don't our opportunities to preserve our history are getting fewer and fewer and fewer. And to just pass this along and just say that, well, nothing important happened here, therefore an old structure should be torn down. Lincoln and Washington and Jefferson and Roosevelt's, they don't all have to sleep somewhere to make a historic structure historic. If you question that, and for those folks who live in Sterling who have concerns about their community, look at the other end of 28 and step into historic Centerville. There is none. There is no historic Centerville. And this is setting up, slowly but surely, this is setting up for the evaporation of the historic Sterling. It doesn't take much to continue to reduce what few historic buildings are left to say that, well, now we don't have to worry about preserving anything. I had the same issue here in Leesburg, just down the street. There were four historic buildings that we deemed must be torn down because we just have to have a little bit more courthouse space. Unfortunately, I was in the minority for trying to save those. We are the stewards of the future, and if we don't preserve today, then we will be asking people, or maybe the future in 130 years from now, they'll be looking to preserve this this storage facility. I can't imagine that, but I would rather not go to work session. If that's what the majority wants to do, I'll vote for it, and hopefully the next commission can look at preserving the structure. But barring that, I would rather see that this application be denied. I think that a lot of folks have moved to Loudoun County because of its historic nature, and pretty soon folks will be moving here because it's very similar to, you know, we call it Fairfax County West, and there is no historic nature left to it. So I would rather not go to planning to a work session. I can't be there anyway. So, thank you.
Commissioner Siska.
My reason for going to work session is to allow some time for the new planning commission to perhaps talk to their supervisors to talk about this very delicate area and perhaps work with the applicant to see whether anything could be done to help in helping this structure to survive. If the applicant right now can tell me that he is not interested at all in trying to preserve the structure. And I read your email, and I understand fire code, and you can't have any wood, you know, on the surface. But I think if there's a will, there is a way. But if the applicant tonight is going to tell me, no, I want my storage center, then I will remove the motion that I have and put in a motion for denial. So I know this is a very difficult spot to put you into, and that's why I also offer the time to you for a work session.
Well, we would much prefer a work session. I certainly will not stand here tonight and say that we are not at all interested. I think we have demonstrated in many ways that we are very interested in historical preservation. The owner of this property is very well known in her city, and by the way, her ancestors lived in this area since the mid-1700s. She has spent much of her life in this area. She has a rather impeccable record in many respects, and perhaps those are the kinds of things that might be discussed at a work session. But my point is this. We are willing to discuss. It may be that when we talk with the gentleman we've been talking with, that he would be very interested in deconstructing it. I suspect that it will be I believe at this point in time it's economically infeasible because, as you pointed out, it costs many hundreds of thousands of dollars. And essentially, to preserve this building will drive the value of the property for its current owner to zero. That's my opinion, but we're willing to go all out, as I believe we have to date, and see if there's something that can't be worked out with the commission and with the staff.
Mr. Young, I very much appreciate your willingness to work with the county, the staff, and the Planning Commission, and the future Board of Supervisors, if indeed this continues on into January and is not approved. You're in a very difficult spot because your property is in the Route 28 district. There are extra taxes that are paid for that. There is a plan for the Route 28 district. And for years and years, these structures have been ignored. I know because I have been stating this vision for I don't know how many decades. And I think when the economy dropped, that's when, you know, quite frankly, everything went to hell. And every historic area in the county, Ashburn, for example, is suffering from this. Our own Loudoun Museum, you know, may close. So I want to give this a little bit of time. I think we have a applicant that's willing to work with us. And you didn't say, but your architect is from the McLean, works with the McLean Arts. And I feel that you want to do something and work with us. So I'll keep that motion on the table for work session.
Any other comments? Commissioner Clancher, followed by Commissioner Rudicelli.
I'm going to support the motion to go to work session, but I do want to sort of talk about what we're doing here. The arguments made about the history of this property and the desire to offer it some level of salvation are certainly meritorious. However, unless there is an actual program set into place to actually achieve those goals, the property is going to sit there and rot for another 10 or 15 or 20 years. We, in my time on this commission, I think we had one example of a log cabin off Route 7 that everybody wanted to preserve, and one thing was delayed after delayed and delayed. So finally it burned, and then since it had burned, we could approve something to replace it. We had another instance where there was great wailing and gnashing of teeth to preserve a property, and the final agreement was we're going to take it apart and then we're going to store it so that maybe someday someone will decide they want to reassemble it. It rotted in the containers. At the same time, I am very happy that several years ago in the Historic Resources CPAM, we established an Historic Resources Committee that has the authority and the ability to work with preserving properties. The ones that particularly come to mind are the old toll house right It's practically under Route 7 up in Kinkora. And the slave quarters, where the county worked with the developers of Arcola Center to preserve the slave quarters and integrate them into a larger development. So we have examples of wasted time, and we have examples of a successful resolution to a given situation. I am hoping that what we're doing tonight is opening the gateway to a successful resolution. That being said, unless someone like the county's historic resources group, an outside group, will come in and actively participate in doing this, we've been told that both nationally and statewide, there is not sufficient merit to put it on a register. And absent that sufficient merit to register it, I would have difficulty voting to deny it simply because we don't think it has the merit when we have professionals who've told us it doesn't. If it can be done and there's someone who can step up to the plate and assist in doing this, I'll be all for it. But I would be looking for a positive direction to achieve preserving in some fashion or other that structure, either as is, taken down and rebuilt, or have components of it incorporated into the redesign of the new facility.
Thank you, Commissioner Clancher. Commissioner Rudicelli, followed by Scheel, followed by
Blackburn.
You've spoken.
Commissioners Dunn and Clancher have said a lot of what I wanted to say, but I just want to make one further comment very quickly, which is that if something is to happen, and I think something should happen, it needs to come from the community. The community needs to step up, shoulder the burden, and carry it forward. And that's why I think going to a work session is beneficial. It gives you a little bit of time to get your act together. Absent that, I think that the applicant should be able to move forward.
Thank you, Commissioner Rudicelli. Commissioner Scheel.
I just want to say that it seems that the state has been speaking with two tongues, because as I said, the Virginia Department of Historic Resources says it's an excellent and unique, that means only one of its kind, example of a vernacular interpretation of the Gothic Revival style. And yet, on the other hand, it says it's not eligible for register. Doesn't really make sense. And the whole field of historic preservation is so nebulous, and I wish it could get together with itself and have some standard that did make sense. But I think the work session is the best way to do. If the Sterling community could get some other people out here that are concerned with the area, it would be very, very helpful. That's all.
Thank you, Commissioner Scheel. Commissioner Siska. That's right, Commissioner Blackburn, and then Commissioner Siska, if it's short.
I agree with Commissioner Clancher. Are we all sit up here and we're having a pity party over something that's been sitting there for 30 years and no one seemed to care about? Kind of reminds me of buying a new car and then you look at your old car and all of a sudden it looks a lot better than it did when you got rid of it. I think we have to keep in mind that this property belongs to somebody and they're paying the taxes on it. And it will be an improvement to Sterling to have a proper business there. If the community of Sterling can come forward with millions of dollars to make this happen and make this profitable for this landowner, I'd be, you know, willing to listen to it. I mean, I will go to work session if it's the only way to keep it from dying, but I'm ready to approve it tonight. It's sad that things fall apart, but it's been sitting there for 30 years falling apart. And again, I say nobody cared about it then. until now. And, you know, I'm not willing to put in any money into it. And I think we all need to say, are any of you willing to put money into this to keep it alive? It's a big difference to be sympathetic and to have this ideal, and you drive by this property and the community acts like they own it, but they don't own it, and they never have. The people who abandoned it years ago let it go. And I think that's what we have to do and move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Blackburn. Commissioner Siska.
Speaking to Commissioner Rudicelli's and Commissioner Blackburn's comments and reflecting back on what Commissioner Clancher also said in regards to the log house that is on Route 7 and Potomac View Road, Commissioner Clancher was absolutely correct. That applicant, who they were a nonprofit, spent considerable amounts of money to put the log structure into a metal storage unit, and several years later, I think it was about 10 years later, it was found that most of them had rotted. And we had asked them, I had worked with them very closely, if they could use any parts of it within the structure. And I believe they may have put some in the floorboards, maybe made some shelving inside the rehab. I'm not really sure. But I want to speak to an applicant's responsibility, and not so much for the community, because this is the applicant that owns the property, and he can either do something very, very inventive and bring to light, marketing-wise, that this is going to be a tremendous landmark, or it can just become another storage facility. That applicant, the Potomac Rehab, actually moved their building 1 foot. 1 foot. Okay, now think of the expense of moving that rehab center 1 foot to be able to keep the stairs and the foundation of that log cabin, which it could not be on the historical register, but has only some historical significance. And please go by there and look at what they have done architecturally. It is amazing. And it's in their courtyard. The people in the rehab center go out in wheelchairs with their visitors, children. They play in the courtyard, and they have a piece of history there. So many of these pieces are lost. If I had the money, I would buy that property in a snap and do something that is much more creative with it than what is being proposed here. So I just want to say I very much respect the applicant's right to develop his property. I just hope that we can go back to the drawing board and think anew, you know, something that would make this a landmark nationally and show people across the country, look what we are doing here, not only in Sterling, but in Loudoun County, the wealthiest county in the nation, and we can't save this. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Siska. Before we call for a vote, I just wanted to say I would be in favor of this application. I think it's an excellent application. I think the applicant is willing to do what's sufficient for the building. I think Commissioner Blackburn hit the nail on the head. There's been 30 years for somebody to want to take over the property. I'm sure the owner would have sold it on many occasions. With that, I'll call for the vote to go to work. Yes, sir.
Before we vote, I noticed that the critical action date, which I believe Ms. Siska pointed out, is January, the end of January of 16, which I believe is the action date for the Board of Supervisors to take action. If we go to work,
BZA.
Pardon me?
BZA.
I'm sorry. And my concern is that we would not be able to comply with that, so I wanted to know if the applicant would be willing to extend the date an extra month so we could have our work session, make a referral, and have the BZA make the ultimate decision on the application.
Okay, Mr. Merrithew, do you know when the BZA meets in January?
They'll meet on the 28th of January, which is the critical action date. The BZA will meet on the 28th of January for Thursday, and that is the critical action date, I believe, for this application. The applicant has indicated an interest in going to work session.
So I'll ask the question, will the applicant agree to extend the deadline?
Yes, we'd be willing to extend it for 30 days and ask at the same time the earliest possible date for a work session.
Very well. Okay. Thank you. With that, the motion to move to work session, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions. The motion passes 7-0-2. We'll see you. I believe January 12th will be the earliest work session we can get you in at.
Thank you again, Mr. Young.
I'm going to ask for a 10-minute break, and then we'll come back and look at ZRT 2015-4. Okay, our next application is ZRTD 2015-0004, Prospect Industrial Park, Lot 4. Mr. Klein, welcome.
Yes, good evening, Planning Commissioners. I'll give Nancy a second to pull up the presentation. I'm here this evening with a fairly straightforward application, Prospect Industrial Park, Lot 4, which is a zoning conversion application. The applicant, Mackel Smoot Joint Venture, LLC, is seeking a zoning conversion in the Route 28 Tax District to convert their 2.5-acre parcel from Planned Development Industrial Park, or PDIP, under the 1972 zoning ordinance to the PDIP District under the revised 1993 zoning ordinance to allow the development of all principal and accessory uses listed in the ordinance up to a floor area ratio of 0.6. Uses included in the revised 93 PDIP district include such things as distribution, office, flex uses, manufacturing, processing, fabrication, other business uses, and those type of things. Again, this 2.5-acre subject site is located at the western terminus of Acacia Lane. It's immediately east of Randolph Drive, west of Morin Road, and west of the Route 28. And south of Broderick Lane. The subject property is currently vacant and unimproved. It's covered with mature vegetation. There are no historic or other sensitive environmental features on the site, as indicated by the county's GIS records. There are no existing or approved site plans for this parcel. However, the applicant also has a site plan application that is currently under review by the Department of Building and Development. That site plan approval is being held until this zoning conversion application makes its way through the Planning Commission and subsequently receives action by the Board of Supervisors. The site is planned for Route 28 business uses, and it's within our suburban policy area, and it's also located within the Broad Run District. The site is surrounded by similar planned development, general industrial and planned development, industrial park parcel uses to the north, south, east, and west. That includes flex industrial and general industrial uses, including warehousing. Our revised general plan policies generally support the conversion of parcels located within the Route 28 tax district to the most up-to-date version of the revised 1993 zoning ordinance. This will ensure a pattern of development that supports the county's economic development goals. Conversion of the 2.5-acre parcel will allow the applicant full utilization of the regulations contained within the revised 1993 zoning ordinance, including the development of all principal and accessory uses at a floor area ratio of 0.6. This zoning conversion would allow the applicant to be compatible with their adjacent property owners as well, which many of them are under the revised 1993 zoning ordinance. Staff does recommend approval of this application subject to the proffer statement that was contained in your staff report, and I'd be happy to speak to any specific questions or comments you may have this evening. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Klein. Does the applicant have an application? Hurry. Do you have a presentation?
I have a 25-minute presentation on this, Mr. Chairman.
If you could make it 26, then you'll get a Butterfinger as well.
Thank you. Andrew Painter with the law firm of Walsh Gallucci, along with Ben Rose from Bowman Consulting for the applicant. Don't have a presentation. Did want to say that this public hearing has been duly advertised. Notices have been sent out in accordance with ordinance and statutory requirements. We do have nothing to add to staff's report, and we would request your favorable recommendation of approval this evening. Thank you.
24 minutes and 37 seconds left. Great. Thank you, Mr. Painter, for being brief. Does the Planning Commission have any questions for staff or the applicant? Commissioner Blackburn.
Sorry, I wasn't expecting to be the first person as I eat my Butterfinger. It says here in the packet that there's an active site plan for a temple and caretaker quarters. My question would that be a by right or a special exception if this were converted?
If it's converted, a religious temple is a by right permitted use in the 1993 PDIP zoning district.
Okay, very good. How about the caretaker quarters? Would that be a residence?
That's ancillary use to the principal permitted use, so it would be permitted by right as well.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Blackburn. Any other questions? Okay. That being said, this application... Oh, sorry. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak? Seeing none, the public hearing is now closed. This application is in the Broad Run District. Commissioner Ryan is absent. Would somebody else like to make a motion on this application? Commissioner Ruiselli.
ZRTDs are so complicated. But I think I'll move, therefore, that the Planning Commission forward ZRTD 2015-0004, Prospect Industrial Park, Lot 4, to the Board of Supervisors with a recommendation of approval, subject to the proffer statement dated November 18, 2015, and based on the findings for approval in the December 15, 2015 Planning Commission public hearing staff report.
There's a motion seconded by Commissioner Dunn. Are there any... comments or questions before the vote? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 7-0-2 with Commissioner Ryan absent and Commissioner Douglas absent. Thank you very much. Our next application is coming up. Our next application is Special Exception 2015-25 and Special Exception 2015-26, Vine and Branches Church Child Care. Ms. McConnell, welcome.
Good evening. Let's see here. Okay. This application is for two special exceptions, one for a church and one for a child daycare center. The Planning Commission should have received a supplemental memo at the middle of last week that provided updated conditions of approval as well as a revised motion. The subject property is located on the west side of Gum Spring Road, south of Braddock Road, and north of Lennox Hale Drive. It's in the transition policy area and is comprised of two parcels that are just over 9 acres in total. The zoning for these parcels is TR3, which is transitional residential, or three dwelling units, or one dwelling unit per 3 acres. Development in the vicinity includes the residential communities in the suburban policy area north of Braddock Road, Braddock Corner, and South Riding, as well as the recently approved Whitman North property, which was approved by the board in November for 238 dwelling units. South of Braddock Road in the transition policy area is Virginia Manor, which was approved as Seven Hills in 2006 to the south and west, and undeveloped parcels, including Ticonderoga Farms to the southeast, Catholic High School further to the east, and then the Whitman South property, again approved in November. This portion for a retail center, including a convenience store and with gas pumps, and a child care center for up to 204 children. And there's also an existing telecommunications monopole on this property. Also have the Braddock Road Child Care Center approved in July 2015 for up to 218 students further west on Braddock Road. Each parcel has a single-family detached structure and accessory buildings on site, and then immediately to the north are vacant parcels or parcels with large lot residential parcels that are developed similarly to the parcel, the subject property. With this proposal, Vine and Branches Church is proposing a 94,000-square-foot church with an anticipated attendance of up to 600 parishioners and a child care center with an enrollment of up to 250 children. The footprint of the building is about 70,500 square feet. I'd included that number in the initial description of the property or the building, and was advised later that there's going to be a second story that's partially underground. That's where the increased square footage comes from. The building will be constructed in up to four phases, with the first phase shown here in rust. It's a 23,000 square foot building that would accommodate child care for up to 164 children, as well as church uses. At this point, access to the property would be from Lenox Hale Drive to the south. There was right-of-way provided with the Seven Hills rezoning, with the planned consideration for residential or non-residential uses to the north, and that access was to be provided for those uses with the Seven Hills application. The applicant will also install a signal at the Gum Spring Road, Lenox Hale intersection, which is just off this drawing to the south here. If it has not been constructed yet by the Whitman South application, they both are required by conditions of approval to conduct a warrant study and then install the signal if it's required prior to, and the signal should be installed and operational prior to receiving an occupancy permit for the special exception use. So it really would depend on who develops first. The traffic signal is partially funded by money from the Seven Hills rezoning. Phase two would include two additions to the north of the phase one. One is a 22,000 square foot addition, the other a 5,300 square foot addition. This would allow the child care center to expand up to the 250 students, as well as some additional church expansion. With this phase two, the applicant would also be installing access from Gum Spring Road. This would not be a full movement intersection. People leaving the site would not be allowed to turn left and head north onto Gum Spring Road with this proposed intersection. Phase three would be for the sanctuary of 17,000 square feet. That would allow them to accommodate up to 600 parishioners. And then phase four is a 26,500 square foot addition to accommodate the church activity space to the rear of the church. There's also two outdoor play areas that will be provided on the north side of the church. The applicant's also providing additional buffering and screening along the northern property line should residential uses be maintained or established to the north, as well as additional screening of the parking that's proposed in the front of the building. Also, upon redevelopment of these parcels to the north, the applicant would provide an interparcel access to those parcels. This slide shows a rendering of the proposed church, the view from Gum Spring Road entrance. So it's sort of an oblong view. You aren't looking straight on at the church. You're kind of looking at the longer angle. So this is a kind of a right angle in here. The applicant is committing to this elevation for the north or the east side of the building, as well as additional commitments for the other elevations of the building. The sanctuary at the left side is 150 feet wide and 135 feet from Gum Spring Road, while the side gable portion is set back even further at 260 feet, and it's about 100 feet wide. As I noted earlier, the properties in the transition policy area, which is envisioned as a distinct planning area to serve as a visual and spatial transition between the suburban policy area to the east and the rural policy area to the west. Compatible non-residential uses would include institutional uses such as the church, as long as they protect the development pattern envisioned in the transition policy area and environmental and heritage resources. With these design commitments for the elevations, as well as the setback and the reorientation of the building, so that it decreases the building frontage along Gum Spring Road. The proposal does achieve the development pattern envisioned in the transition policy area. The applicant's commitments to the screening of the parking, also the transportation impacts, mitigating the transportation impacts by installing that signal at the Gum Spring Road and Lenox Hill intersection, as well as providing a 10-foot trail along the property frontage, the interparcel access to both the north and the south, and protecting downstream water resources through enhanced erosion and sediment control, and providing during construction and providing one LID feature mitigate and the impacts of the site and meet plan policy. And there are no issues, and staff recommends approval with conditions. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. McConnell. Does the applicant have a presentation?
Good evening. My name is Ben Wales. I'm a land use planner with Cooley. I'm here tonight with Ken Watkinson of the Vine and Branches Church. I don't have a presentation. I have one loaded, but I don't intend to reiterate what Kate has already provided in her thorough presentation. We are very excited to be with you tonight for the next important step in the growth of this very impressive church. Staff is in support of the application. We don't have any outstanding conditions or comments or questions. We have a recommendation of approval, and we'd be grateful for your support tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Wales. Does the does the Planning Commission have any questions for staff or the applicant? Okay, seeing none, we have three speakers signed up to speak on this application. The first speaker will be Ray Schauble, followed by Tara Kosciusz-Stock.
Good evening. Thank you for this opportunity. I am Ray Schauble. I'm the president of the congregation of Vine and Branches. My wife and I moved into Loudoun County 14 years ago in 2001 from West Springfield and Fairfax, and we love living in Loudoun County. It has met all our needs, except for the fact that we didn't have a church close by to us. We'd been going back to West Springfield to go to church, and we said about 5 years ago, we said we really need to do something about this. So we started meeting with like-minded folks in our homes, and then we grew to a point where we went into some county facilities like the community room and the fire station and South Riding. And then we moved even bigger into the multi-purpose center in South Riding there to meet in their big meeting room. And within the last year and a half, we actually have moved into a school, Liberty Elementary School in South Riding. We started meeting there in the cafeteria, and then we grew some more, and then we moved into the gymnasium now. So that's where we're currently meeting on Sunday mornings. We've had a very good relationship with the school and the Loudoun County school system, and it's been a very beneficial relationship. We have done our due diligence, but as you can see, our space requirements have expanded. We know that for a variety of reasons that we have found an excellent location for a permanent site, as you have you just heard. Approval of the special exception applications will allow our church to operate from a purpose-built facility. We're grateful for the ability to be currently worshiping, like I said, at Liberty Elementary School, but we're looking forward to being able to hold services, baptisms, and other functions in a building built for that purpose. Our church leaders have spent a considerable amount of time over the last year or so working with our architect and with the county staff to create and refine an attractive design for our church and our child care center that will be very beneficial not only to us and the congregation, but to the community. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Schauble. Our next speaker is Tara Kosciusz-Stock, followed by Pastor Dax Jordan.
Thank you. My name is Tara Kosciusz-Stock. Thank you for saying that, pronouncing it correctly. It rarely happens, so especially at this hour. I am also grateful and thankful for this time tonight. I serve as vice president on the board, moving from Centerville, Virginia, to Virginia Manor, as you know, Seven Hills. And we found our new home by investigating the property for this new church and child daycare center. So we're delighted to be residents of the future area. The application property is a wonderful location for the child care center. It offers a safe and conducive environment for our children, and it is easily accessible within the community, as you could see from the site plans. The building design is attractive and is consistent with the site's location and the transition area policy. With all of that, we have seen and agree to the county staff's recommendations with the transition area policy and will conform to those recommendations. Thank you.
Great, thank you. I'm going to say thank you, Tara, and just keep my excellent record there. Our next speaker will be Pastor Dax Jordan.
Thank you. Blessings to you all. Thank you for hearing us today. My name is Pastor Dax Jordan, and my wife and I have been residents of Loudoun County since 2008. I have two little girls, a three-year-old and a two-year-old, who attend a faith-based child development center up in Ashburn. We do a little bit of commuting there. We have seen the positive effects that that this child development center has had on our daughter and our family since they have been attending the past year. Our church, Vine and Branches, is committed to providing the same opportunity to the families of South Riding and the Southern Dulles region, and we are excited about offering a fully licensed, full daycare center where it has been needed for some time. When this child development center is complete, surprisingly, it will be the only center like this in that Stone Ridge, Aldi area. We hope this center will serve many families from different faith backgrounds. Vine and Branches is also committed to providing meeting space for various help groups and character building organizations that might wish to use our facility after school and in the evenings. Our hope as a church is to make contact and to serve the Dulles South neighborhoods in as many ways as we can. We are taking the lead from our two other sister congregations in our denomination who have gone before us in providing a meeting space for so many of their community's needs. We also want to follow in their footsteps. As the need for more facility and growth happens in parallel with the population growth, we wish to continue to grow and to an appropriate size for the community that we're in the future. We are asking for a special exception to allow for the phased development of the church and the Child Development Center. On behalf of the congregation, we thank you for your consideration.
Great. Thank you, Pastor Jordan. Those are the three speakers that have signed up to speak. Is there anybody else that would like to speak on this application? Great. The gentleman over in the corner, if you could fill out a speaker slip when you're done, that would be great.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ever so briefly, I thought I'd tell you some kind of a funny story with regard to this. I was tasked by the church to help find them a location down the Dulles South area. So I happened to contact Mr. and Mrs. Kratzky. And when I talked to Mr. Kratzky, I said they had just been under contract with Miller & Smith. It wasn't going anywhere, so I'd read their story in the local paper. So I talked to Mr. Kratzky and said, would you be interested in entertaining another contract for a church? He said, okay, what type of church? I said, well, it'd be a Lutheran church. He goes, oh, we're Lutheran. I said, well, that's nice. And then he said, well, what group would it be? What parish would it come from? I said, it would come from Prince of Peace out in Springfield. And he said, well, I used to be a member there. I said, all right, what time can we meet? So needless to say, it was we'd like to say went full circle and a little divine intervention, and the Kratzkys are very happy to entertain selling their property to them. Thank you for your favorable consideration. Thanks for your 4 years of service.
For the record, Mr.
Bierman. Oh, and I'm Larry Bierman, by the way, if you want.
Yeah, what was your name again? Thank you, Mr. Bierman. Thank you very much. There's one other gentleman that would like to speak. Please step up to the podium, fill out a speaker slip when you're completed. If you just follow roughly what Mr. Bierman is doing, you should be okay.
Okay.
Hello, my name is Stefan Dunham. My wife, Jeanette, and I are here actually just representing ourselves. We live in the Virginia Manor community. I'm an active member of the Open Space Committee of Dulles Farms Homeowners Association, but I am not here on the association's behalf. I'm just here representing ourselves. The association's busy fighting Kirkpatrick West and the Super Harris Teeter, as you guys are well aware of. I have attended the presentations and the general consensus among, well, I'm very happy to have a church moving in next door. And we've been talking to some of our neighbors, and that's the impression that I'm getting as well. Churches make good neighbors, and I just wanted to make that point. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Stefan. Are there any other members of the public that would like to speak on this application? Seeing none, the application is now closed. Would the applicant like a chance to make comments on any of those public speeches?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Very well. Are there any other members of the Planning Commission that have any questions for the staff or the applicant? Okay. This is in the Blue Ridge District, but it's pretty close to the Dulles District, like about 60 feet. Mr. Douglas has requested that I make the motion on this application, and I do so gladly. I'd like to let everybody know I actually come from the West Springfield area, go West Springfield Spartans, different than the Broad Run Spartans, sorry, Bob, and better colors. So, I'm familiar with the original church in Springfield. I had my first and second jobs within feet of the church, and they've done a great job. I didn't realize that they expanded it. I drove by on Sunday. But getting back to this particular application, I believe it's a great application. It's in a good location for the community. It's in a good location for the church. It does meet the needs of the community. As we know, there have been several daycare centers that we've approved recently in this general vicinity. Turns out that every single one of them opens up at 100% capacity, go figure. So I think that's needed. I think it's great that that we have people coming from my old neck of the woods out to my new neck of the woods. And I'm excited to have you and welcome you into the neighborhood and welcome you into your soon-to-be new facility. So with that, I move that the Planning Commission forward Special Exception 2015-25 and Special Exception 2015-26, Vine and Branches Church and Child Care to the Board of Supervisors with a recommendation of approval, subject to the conditions of approval dated December 7, 2015, and based on the findings for approval and the December 15, 2015, Planning Commission Public Hearing Staff Report. Is there a second? Seconded by Commissioner Dunn. Is there any comments or questions, except about Broad Run Spartans? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And abstentions? The motion passes 7-0-2 with Commissioner Ryan absent and Commissioner Douglas absent. Thank you very much and good luck on your new building. Our final application for the evening, did I get that right? Yes. Is ZMAP 2015-6, this is Shops at Eastgate, PDCC SC District. ZMAP 2015-10, Shops at Eastgate, PD MUB District. Special Exception 2015-18, Shops at Eastgate Auto Service. Special Exception 2015-19, Shops at Eastgate Office. And SIDP 2015-9, Shops at Eastgate Sign Plan. Mr. Snyder, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Also with me tonight is Marie Genovese from Community Planning, my wingman for this last item. These applications concern 8 acres in the southern end of the county near the shared county boundary with Fairfax. South of Route 50, east and south of the project are the planned Foxgate developments, also the planned Walton 1 Continuing Care Facility. Eastgate Marketplace, also has a Harris Teeter, and continues to be developed west of the property. This is a view looking south from Route 50, subject site in red, general outline of Foxgate development to the east, and also the Eastgate Marketplace development to the west. Okay. As mentioned, five applications for your consideration. First would be an application to zone 8 acres from CLI and PDMUB to the Planned Development Commercial Center, Small Regional Center District in the area identified in orange. This would allow up to 140,000 square feet of commercial uses and would include such uses as drive-through banks, fast food restaurants, and retail pad sites. They've also asked for zoning modifications, which will reduce the parking and building setbacks adjacent to Tall Cedars Parkway, Eastgate View Road, and also the neighboring properties of Walton Wood and Foxgate. The next rezoning would be 1 acre from CLI to the Planned Mixed-Use Business District. This has to do or has a relationship with this abandoned hotel project. This project would allow, or this district would allow, additional parking capacity for that hotel use, either as surface parking or as a structured parking facility. This is an excerpt from the concept plan. Next are special exception applications. First, for an automobile service station at the corner of Eastgate View Road and Tall Cedars Parkway. This is a Royal Farms facility, 5,000 square feet of convenience store, 16 fueling stations, and again located at the southeast corner of the property. Next would be office uses in excess of 20% of the overall floor area, which again I mentioned is 140,000 square feet for the district. Last is a signed development plan for the SC district and also the service station. This would allow for larger and more project identification signs here and here, and also allow a certain amount of service station signage. Last, there are offering transportation improvements. This would be lane improvements along Eastgate View Road and also a right-in, right-out on Tall Cedars Parkway. It also includes pedestrian improvements along the perimeter project and interior to the site. Discussion focused primarily on the planned land use. What you see here is a graphic of the Route 50 corridor noting existing and planned retail and mixed-use developments. The subject property is identified in the black circle and also in the parcel in yellow with the red outline. This is planned business uses, which the predominant use is envisioned to be employment uses such as office and light industrial. Many of the requested uses under the CLI district, which is the current designation, would be permitted by special exception uses. They are asking to allow a lot of retail and service uses by right, which combined with the amount of retail already approved for the sub area would be about 18%. The recommended policy is 10, so you're looking about an overall 8% increase over the planned or anticipated retail acreage for, again, this area of the county, which is the Eastgate sub area. Although the policy would not support the amount of retail as proposed by this application, we've nonetheless made several recommendations. This is a graphic imposing the Foxgate concept development plan, the subject property and the subject application in this location, and also relation to the Eastgate Marketplace. The applicant is going to go into more detail in terms of their responses to these recommendations. I did meet with Packy today to go over this comprehensive list. First, asking for more specific requirements with regards to design, bringing buildings closer to Route 50 to match Eastgate Marketplace and also structures within Foxgate, excluding uses that are regional or retail uses that are regional in nature, such as automobile service and sales, requesting a minimum amount of office use. They've already asked to permit office in excess of 20%. The traffic study looked at about 15,000, so we were recommending to meet the policy they commit to a certain amount of office use. Specific commitments to this type and amount of public, civic, and open space on the property. We had talked about cash in lieu of a possible bus stop location and also closure of this right-in, right-out access at the point that the interchange in this location is built at some point in the future. Talking with the applicant in the lobby before the hearing, these two issues we expect to be resolved. Also, enhanced screening along Tall Cedars Parkway adjacent to the interchange. And lastly, a series of revisions to the signed development plan, which they've agreed to reduce the project identification signs and clarify some of the signs associated with the service station. So at this time, we will continue to work with the applicant to reflect these commitments in the design guidelines, proffer statement, and also special exception conditions of approval. So that being said, Mr. Chairman, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Schneider. Quick question just for clarification. You said that these things are, we don't have an official piece of paper in writing, but it's sufficient at this point to move forward with a staff approval for recommendation. Is that correct?
We're not going to recommend denial. We have not seen it in writing. I think we would feel comfortable, and we expect that Packy, through her presentation, is going to have verbal commitments to a lot of these things. And absent the retail question we put to the commission, we'd otherwise be supportive of the application.
Okay. Thank you. Does the applicant have a presentation?
Good evening. For the record, my name is Packy Crown. I'm with Bowman Consulting. Andrew Painter, the attorney working on this project, is here tonight with us, and also representatives of the property owners, Eastgate Partners 3 LLC, and the hotel property. We're here tonight. I won't go through a long presentation, but as Marchant said earlier, he and I met today. We have, I believe, resolved all of the issues except probably the one policy issue that we don't ever seem to be able to resolve. However, we think we have met the intent of the comprehensive plan policies in this area. As most of you know, I've worked in this area for many years. This area is really referred to as the Eastgate community. It is comprised of the Eastgate properties that are in the lighter green color, background colors, and includes the Foxgate area to just to the east. Foxgate is a mixed-use, planned mixed-use business community that is approved for development of over 1 FAR, and it includes the hotel. As many of you know, the hotel has been a challenging issue for the county for many years. It was a challenge when we were zoning the Foxgate application. We were asked to include Foxgate into, or the hotel into the Foxgate application because it became a distressed property during that time, and with the hopes that by including it, it would increase the FAR and increase value in the ground and hopefully lead to the construction and the opening of the hotel. At this point, this hotel has changed ownership. The new ownership is trying very hard to complete it. They're very long into the process. But one of the key issues that the hotel has had to deal with over the last 7-8 years in attracting a full-service hotel flag to this destination is parking. Parking does meet the zoning ordinance criteria, but it doesn't meet what the hoteliers are looking for to meet market demand. As a full-service hotel, this will include conference and banquet facilities and provide a hotel in the Dulles South area that hopefully will be the catalyst for more tourism in the Dulles South area, a place that can be used as staging areas for tourism further to the west and even to the south to the battlefield. So when we were working on Foxgate, we worked very hard to try to incorporate policies and requirements in Foxgate that we thought would lead to the development of this hotel, the construction of it sooner rather than later. But Foxgate has not begun their construction, and parking therefore has become and continues to be a challenge for the hotel. So we're here tonight to put before you an application that we believe will solve that issue for the hotel and for the county. This will complete the hotel, we believe. It is a
kind of an intricate application. It's taken us a couple of years, actually, to figure this out, to bring it forward. But it is a combination of a couple of rezonings and a land swap that will provide for the extra parking for the hotel. And then we have several different special exceptions, as Marchant went through in his presentation, one for an automobile service station, one to increase the office that would be permitted in the PDSC district above 20% of the FAR, assigned development plan and design guidelines, and then buffer modifications, all to create a package that we believe will be beneficial for the county. As I explained, this includes a land swap. It really requires a land swap between the owners of the current CLI property, Eastgate Partners property, 1 acre that will be conveyed to the hotel owners. This will provide the land necessary to provide for the additional parking for the hotel. It will begin as surface parking. It will evolve into a structured parking facility. This property is located in the Route 50 area. Many of us, many of you on the Planning Commission worked on the Route 50 Task Force and worked on the policies that we are trying to implement and stay within the intent tonight. As you, many of you know, though, too, the policies for Route 50 really were divided into four different segments for Route 50. This was segment one. Segment one had some challenging characteristics, one of them being that it is just south of Dulles Airport. It is south of the quarry and located on the border of Fairfax County. So we had some issues that we dealt with for trying to incentivize the parcels to become consolidated in this area, to develop as a consolidated plan, and to provide the types of uses that were not only supportive to for the Route 50 corridor, but supportive for the surrounding communities, and to create a tourism link for the county, a tourism asset for the county, to try to draw, if you will, business out of Fairfax County and into Loudoun County. The first part of that process was the Foxgate application. This, we believe, is really the last piece that's needed to fill in the Eastgate community. As Marchant explained, the Eastgate Marketplace, as you know, has been developed. It is almost fully developed, very nice community or asset. The park and ride lot that has been opened just very recently was dedicated out of the Eastgate properties. There will be a soccer field that will eventually be developed as a civic space, again, from the Eastgate properties. We were before you just about 6 months ago, I guess, on the Walton Woods South Riding Project, which is a continuing care facility located just south of this property. And so this really is the last piece. We have agreed with staff today and actually have already amended our design guidelines to provide that any buildings that are located or constructed on the north end of the property would be located adjacent to the Route 50 right-of-way without parking, intervening parking. Parking would be located interior to the site. Access will be interior to the site, to the buildings, entrances. What we have requested, strictly because of maintenance for these buildings to keep them, you know, clean, et cetera, that there would be a drive aisle permitted behind it, but that drive aisle would be landscaped along the boundary by the perimeter landscaping. So as you can see in this exhibit, the buildings that are outlined in red just to the east of this property are the future office buildings in Foxgate. The new buildings that would be located in the shops would be in line along the same plane and along the Route 50 corridor. And they continue the location of buildings that already exist in the marketplace just to the west. This implements the Route 50 policies of trying to create a gateway into Loudoun County that that has buildings predominant as the predominant features along Route 50, along with the landscaping. What the green area just to the north of the buildings will be a future ramp to a future interchange, and landscaping will be there, will be existing until the interchange is constructed. We've also worked with staff on the transportation issues. This property will be serviced by a right-in, right-out off of Tall Cedars. Staff actually asked us to evaluate the traffic impacts of this property with and without the right-in, right-out. It actually functions better with the right-in, right-out for this property, and because this, the only other access to this property is from Eastgate View Drive. We've also proffered to construct a dedicated left turn lane into this area from Eastgate View Drive. The pedestrian access or the pedestrian facilities will be completed. They currently exist along Eastgate View Drive. We are proffering to construct a trail along the east side of Tall Cedars that will connect to the newly constructed trail along Route 50 that exists today. So that completes the transportation network in this area. We've also proffered to construct a bus stop. The bus stop will be located, as of discussions with the staff just this evening, we're agreeing to construct the bus stop on the Eastgate property. We had originally just located it just off to the east of it, but we have agreed to construct it on site. The automobile service station, as Marchant said, is a Royal Farms will be a Royal Farm station. It's the first one in Loudoun County. We've been working with them on their signage and on the station. This is actually a rendering or a photograph of the building architecture that will be constructed on this property. Of note is that Royal Farms is a double-sided building. So there really are two fronts. One will front on Eastgate View Drive. The other front will be interior to the site. And there is architecture all four sides. We've worked with staff on the signage, all the signage for this. And the signage will be carried, the design of for all the signage is carried over from Eastgate Marketplace to the west. So the stone base, the concrete structures, all of that will continue just to the east so that it creates a very unified, pleasant corner at that location that looks like it's just a continuation of the marketplace. This is an example of what the entrance feature sign will look like. It is a mirror image of the one that's located to the west. We have also proffered design guidelines. They are almost identical to the design guidelines for the marketplace. These are photographs of the existing buildings in the marketplace. So they show you and demonstrate the high quality of the materials that have been used at the marketplace. There have been, you know, that it includes architecture on four sides, rear, and the rear and the sides of buildings will be architecturally treated, and that's evidenced by the Capital One building here. Another good example of it is Velocity Wings restaurant at this location. These are sides. This is a side of the building, and the Starbucks, you know, this is all architecture that would be carried forward into the new shops at Eastgate. One of the issues that we have discussed with staff is how to incorporate more civic and open space into this property. I think it's critical to understand that because this is a community, the Eastgate community, there has been a network of open space and civic spaces already developed in this area, and this final piece to the puzzle here will add a civic space, a formal civic space right in the air, right inside the community. And we have told staff today that we would agree to proffer to add other civic space within the community as the project is designed. Let me go back to this slide. Our thought is, as the project is developed, that seating areas that can be located out in front of buildings and to the sides of buildings, either in relationship to the actual tenant or just as gathering spaces, will be incorporated into the design guidelines. So we're going to add this provision in the design guidelines so that we have additional civic and open space in the project as it's developed. We believe that this application before you tonight is probably one of the most critical ones that we've brought forward in the last 2-3 years for the completion of the eastern end of the Route 50 corridor. We've worked very hard over the last 7-8 years to put policies in place, projects in place along Route 50 to change the character of Route 50 and the entrance into Loudoun County from the Fairfax County border coming forward, coming west. This project really does complete the land pattern in here. Yes, the retail uses are a little over the percentage based on land area that the comprehensive plan policies provide. However, an office use at this location at this point in time with the amount of office space that's vacant in Loudoun County, with the competing corridors, office corridors in the county, we believe that the best approach for this property to incentivize and to support the hotel uses is to provide service-based and tourism-based retail and service uses at this location. We have asked for a special exception to exceed the 20% that would be permitted under the PDSC district. The reason we've done that is to be able to respond to the market, office market, when the market returns or if the market now in this area with the completion of the residential units down here with the Walton Wood South Riding Project, we are able to attract medical, local office users into the corridor. I would remind you that the Foxgate application that was approved already provides for 500,000 square feet of commercial and office. And one of the reasons why, I've been asked a lot, well, why hasn't Foxgate started? I can't tell you that, specifically, but I can tell you that I suspect that it's probably tied to the phasing of that project. The first two buildings in the Foxgate project that must be completed are office buildings. And before they can go forward, they must complete two office buildings with a third that then has to be developed and constructed on top of the parking deck. So it's a very expensive development, but it's also awaiting a return of the office uses. We believe that we'll be able to be responsive in a redevelopment format or responsive to a single user if they come in and would like to be at this location. When the future interchange goes in, that certainly will change the character of this area, and this will become a more prominent office location. But in the interim, we believe that the best uses that are going to be supportive of the hotel will be the uses that we've proposed and provided in this application, and we believe that this is the best way to move forward with this property at this point in time. Happy to answer questions tonight if you have them, and thank you very much for the opportunity to speak. And before I close, I would like to thank all of the members of the Planning Commission that have given their service to this community. Mr. Dunn, Helena, others that may or may not be back next term, I've really enjoyed working with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Crown. Are there any questions for the staff or the applicant? Ms. Siska.
Actually, not a question,
Mr. Rudicelli, I didn't mean to skip over you.
Her comments go doubly for me, too. I forgot to mention that, so I echo her.
And thank you for those lovely comments. More of a comment, not so much a question, but kudos to you all for getting to this point. It's been a long, long haul to get there, and for taking care of the Ghost Hotel, finally. And I think it's a beautiful application. And, Packy, I think your comments are probably very rare, but optimistic about when office may come. So I appreciate those comments, and possibly the hotel may spark some office. So I love the application, and thank you for everything over the years that you've done on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Siska. Anybody else? Mr. Clancher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do appreciate the fact that the applicant has worked to address the open space concerns that staff had discussed. I think in designs of this nature, providing that elbow room within the fabric of the application does make it a better experience for the people who are there, and also provide greater opportunities for the businesses that move in to have those outdoor spaces that their patrons can take advantage of. So I'm glad to see that went in the right direction. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Clancher. Commissioner Rudicelli.
I have to get one last word in before I go. I want to thank you, Packy, and Andrew, for this application. I think you've done a great job with it. And I want to point out to the commission, if you haven't already noticed, that the Foxgate development, of course, has not moved forward as rapidly as we might have hoped in an earlier commission. And I think we understand why at this point. And now, as the commission moves forward into its next term, hopefully you will keep that in mind as you reconsider the changes to the comprehensive plan and how that might improve situations in projects such as that. I mean, I know staff has to work within the comprehensive plan, so it's not your fault. But still, I think the plan needs to adapt to the realities of the way projects need to develop. So hopefully this can be a lesson for us as we move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rudicelli. Commissioner Dunn.
Well, as my last application, I want to give Packy and Andrew some opinions they're not going to forget. No, everything. I really wanted to throw out a zinger. It looks good. Thanks for all your work on this.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Dunn. Any other questions? Okay. This is in the Dulles District. I just want to make a couple comments. We're now in public comment. Is there anybody in the audience? We have no speaker signed up to speak. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak on the application? Evidently, I'm not doing a good job tonight. Seeing none. The public comment is now closed. Thank you, Mr. Clancher. This is in the Dulles District. I'm very familiar with the area. As Packy will note, my secondary office is directly across the street from this application because she meets me there quite often. I hesitate to say that I would be willing to approve virtually anything on that corner as long as the hotel got built. But that might be pretty close to the truth. The fact of the matter is, though, the application is a good application. It's a very good application. There's a spot for a fresh and new convenience store / gas station that does not exist anywhere in Loudoun County, mostly Maryland product. And it'll help because there's, frankly, there needs to be more competition to reduce the prices, just like they have the issue in Ashburn. We also have the issue in the South Riding area for that. I think bringing in a new flag for gas stations is a good thing. And I'm glad that we were able to announce that in advance and make everybody aware that we're going to get some good quality product out in this neck of the woods. The other pieces, I think, are fine. I think the key is let's get this done so that the hospital can get approved. And I think that, I'm sorry, so we can get the hotel approved. I think the hotel is important to the area. It certainly is an eyesore, and it's one of the worst, the biggest complaints that that the area gets, and it just makes it look like an unfinished area that is struggling. And frankly, the area is not struggling. If you try to look for office space, small office space in Loudoun County in the Dulles South Corridor, I can tell you where it is. It does not exist. It's getting ready to be built sometime because of the hospital, and that's a good thing. This application is going to help that. It's going to help get us a hotel with additional conference areas, which we don't have either. So I'm excited to put forth this motion, and I hope that everybody else will approve it. I'm glad that we don't have a lot of controversy and a long application on our last item for the year. So with that, I move that the Planning Commission forward ZMAP 2015-6, ZMAP 2015-10, Special Exception 2015-18, Special Exception 2015-19, and SIDP 2015-9, the shops at Eastgate to the Board of Supervisors with a recommendation of approval, subject to the, wow, subject to recommended amendments to the applications as discussed at the December 15th, 2015 public hearing, and based on the following findings. Number one, as proposed, the PDCCSC and PDMUB zoning districts and special exception uses are compatible with existing uses in the area. Number two, the proposed PDMUB district will facilitate redevelopment of an adjacent hotel project. Item three, the applications are consistent with the 2010 revised countywide transportation plan. And item four, the proposal generally conforms to the requirements of the revised 1993 zoning ordinance. Is there a second? Seconded by Commissioner Dunn. Is there any comments? Seeing no comments, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 7-0-2. Thank you very much. Let's go get us some hotel built. With that, Mr. Merrithew, do we have any other items for discussion?
Mr. Chairman, the only item I have to mention is that tomorrow, for those who can attend, the Board of Supervisors has scheduled resolution presentations to its commissioners in appreciation of your 4 years of service. And I would appreciate knowing who could attend or plans on attending so I can advise the chairman who's in the room at the time. But you can do that in a few minutes. I also wanted to say thank you all very much for your term and your service over the past 4 years. I hope you go away understanding that you have had some significant impact on the county. The workload in terms of applications and cases for your last 2 years have been heavier than any year in the past eight, the previous eight, significantly heavier than we had anticipated. You've had significant impact on housing, on the rural economy, and on other areas of the county's economy. So I just want to say thank you for the time. It's been a pleasure working with you, and look forward to working with some of you later. We'll regret not working with some of you later, and maybe we'll see each other again. But thank you very much for your service.
Thank you, Mr. Merrithew. I'd like to also second the sentiment. It's been a pleasure working with everybody on the board. It's been a special pleasure, but unfortunate that not all board members will be returning. I have enjoyed my time with you all. I appreciate it. One last comment. The next meeting of the Planning Commission will actually be moved to Tuesday, January 12, and there will be a meeting prior to that for paperwork and other issues. So with that, this meeting is adjourned.
Mr.
Yes, Chair. Mr. Dunn.
Just, I didn't know if anyone else was going to make a comment, but I did want to thank the opportunity to serve, and it's been a pleasure to all of staff. I found their work to be very professional and very complete, and that's even including John. Right down to the end, he wants to know who's showing up, you know, even for tomorrow's deal. But I thought you were going to say, don't go away, just go away. But thanks. But no, really, it's been a pleasure, and I found that the also with my fellow commissioners, a great camaraderie and superb professionalism, except that I still need to find out what the definition is of a pity party. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dunn. Anyone else? Ms. Siska, what a surprise.
Maybe the last few words you hear me say. No, I'd like to also extend my appreciation to the applicants that we have had over the years. I have been on the commission for 12 years. To the staff, they are so professional and so wonderful to work with. And all the planning commissioners that I have worked with over the past 12 years, it was a delight to see Larry Bierman here this evening as a reminder of some years ago. And I want to thank Nancy also, who I think doesn't always get full appreciation. She sits, you know, a little bit lower than we do, but she is someone who takes care of many, many of our needs. And Lori, you also, and John, you too. And I don't know whether I will be reappointed, but I have full trust that everyone here will take care of whoever sits to represent the Sterling District. And I know that you will take care of us. And my last comment is something very dear to my heart and something that I started when I came on the commission. When I started, I noticed that no one stood to say the Pledge of Allegiance on the Planning Commission. So, yeah. So I ask that we do that. So I think that's very, very important that when we look at the flag, we realize that, oh, gee, the opportunity that we have, the privilege that we have to look at the flag and to be able to have the kind of public discourse that we have in this country still today. And over on the other side, we have the state flag and the Loudoun County flag. Which if the press is listening in, would be really nice if they did a little article on the symbolism on the flag. So I may end with that, or I may be back, I don't know. But I thank you, I applaud you, and kudos to you all for the magnificent support that you all have given to me over the years, both professionally and personally.
Commissioner Rudicelli, I guess you're stuck having
I'm
to say something.
I'm stuck. I need to thank everybody also. I mean, it has been a tremendous pleasure for me to work with all of you. I know we've hit rocky roads sometimes, but we've always done it with a smile at the end of the day. And, you know, it's been just a tremendous pleasure. Everybody has worked so hard and has been so cooperative. It's remarkable, especially in this day and age when I look at other levels of government where they can't seem to get anything done at all. Down here, I think we really have an impact. So I thank you all for your service, and maybe sometime in the future we'll work together again. Who knows? Take care.
Thank you, Commissioner Rudicelli. It's been an honor and a pleasure, and I've learned a great deal. So thank you. And with that, we're adjourned. And with that, we're adjourned. So thank you.